Blog Talk Radio.
Have another jab this Christmas. Now the Omicron is here. You know the joke of COVID toad, but still you live in fear. Have another jab for Christmas when you're walking down the street. Don't say hello to friends you know in distance of 6 feet. I know the TV show dictates what you think. Fear has infected you, turning off your brain. Have another jab for Christmas, and in case you didn't hear, OMG, the TV screen controls you with fear.
It's a basic, truly primal instinct, and it too is contagious.
Is there too much panic?
Spraying Chinese-looking people on the subway.
Does he have the coronavirus or not? I don't know.
Our brains evolved to respond to dangers that we sense around us on our screen. Remember, stress, anxiety, and fear can be useful.
We go to the extreme sometimes to gain control.
We're going to survive this just fine, but there's going to be a slight panic.
I'm Fauci, the Christmas boo. Lock you down tonight. Because you're not so bright. Have another jab this Christmas, and if you were gonna ask, OMG, you're an NPC, cause you drive with a mask. Oh my golly, you're an NPC who drives with a mask.
Oh boy, our satanic power sure did the trick.
Hello. Happy Sunday. This is Seeds of Change, and I'm your host, Danielle St. John. Let's see here. Elizabeth is with us. I'm going to bring her in.
Well, hello, darling. Happy
holidays. Hello. Sorry about that little technical glitch at the beginning. I don't know if anybody even noticed because I was able to play a little song, but my phone dropped just as soon as I called in, so sorry about that.
Oh, I've been listening to the little song because I was like, oh, this is fantastic. I kind of like it. It kind of lets you know what's going on and still a little festive and still kind of give our point of view. Kind of cool.
Exactly.
Guess what? I got family members who spent the time to download the little app and give their info to get the iHeart. And they're like, oh, my God, we're going to listen. There are so many people out there that haven't talked politics in years and are just past the point of disbelief in the fact that everything is propaganda. And I was so pleased to see that they know and they realize, and they were willing to have a conversation, and they're upset about it. And I was like, I didn't know you had it in you, guys. So it's kind of like there's hope out there. It was. It was very inspiring. So I'm hoping to get a whole new audience listening up today. I'm a little excited. So I like that. I like that that song. And
well,
but
we actually have a caller. Speaking of that, we've got a caller with their hand up. Maybe that's funny.
That might be. But I want to tell you that COVID is officially over because the masses have said, we're done with this. And I was like, I'm so proud of you. Because these were the people that allowed this to happen the first time, and they're done with it. I was like, it's a happy new year already. So, yes, let our caller join the – let's have a Christmas show today. How about that? It'll be a little uplifting. And then chock full of, you know, fantastic information on top of that. So how you doing? Who's with us? Or is that John?
Did we get John? I'm back. I don't know what's going on with my phone.
I babbled. There was no dead air. I just babbled. So did we get our caller in the queue? We're having technical difficulties today. We got the gremlins. We might have the. You know what? We're having. I'm gonna have to carry this all by myself. We're having calls getting dropped, and for all I know, you don't even hear me. But I tell you what, we're having a really, really great holiday season so far because, despite the fact that they want to put that damper upon that the fear factor, don't travel too far and don't see too many people. We're going the opposite direction. We're having massive reunion parties, and we've decided to live for the day. If we all get sick, we all get sick, but at least we had a good time at the party. That's how we're living our life. And I think it's catching on worldwide.
Okay, well, I'm back again. I don't know how long.
Welcome back to the show.
I don't know what's going on here. I'm going to try to see if I can, like, do a direct call.
Well, I tell you what,
you
sound good. So don't touch any buttons. Just don't touch anything. Don't break anything. we're doing
okay,
good
all
right.
Now. Fingers crossed. Yes. And the caller dropped, too. I'm so sad.
Well, maybe they can make it back in.
Hopefully.
But I tell you what, I kind of feel your pain as far as only doing a show by yourself because I did a cute little monologue there, but I don't know how long I can keep that going without
exactly.
Take
exactly.
On every rabbit hole.
Yeah, and mom is here too. I let her in
awesome.
While I was down. Fortunately, like I can play videos and stuff like that. I just can't hear.
Well, I'll tell you what. I can hear you perfectly. And let's see if Carla can get in and mom can get in. If we got good audio, let's just roll with it.
Can you hear me today?
We'll just do old school, you know, and if we get callers.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
We can. Welcome.
Thank you. Okay, so I hope Danielle's able to stay on for a few minutes.
That would be good. I told her not to touch anything.
It looks like we lost her again. Oh, my gosh, Elizabeth, we lost her again. Bless her little heart.
She'll be back.
Hey, I want to congratulate you. She was able to let me so we can have a conversation. So I'm glad to hear your family members were in town. I'm glad to hear that you were able to have a conversation with them, and hopefully they can join us today and get in on the conversation.
But, you know, the thing that really kind of inspired me was, not to single out anybody, but, you know, I think they are kind of like the majority of the population that, you know, just wanted to do the right thing. And therefore, this all snowballed into a communistic cold hell of duck walk. And I think they've all seen it. And I was just like, okay, this is a nice, what would the word be? It weighs the balance. The pulse. This is the pulse of the nation, I think. And I'm like, this is fantastic because as much as they want to scare us again, and I don't even have the radio on right now. I'm doing just my own little music and my own little, you know, Downton
Abbey.
That's the
way to do it.
I don't know what the propaganda machine's doing, but I got a little glimmer of it, and it's probably all the same things, you know. That they've been doing for the last 3 years, scaring us with the cold and trying to ruin
the holidays.
I'm back
again for who knows how long.
Welcome
back
to the show.
Okay. All right.
You just won a T-shirt.
Yeah.
So can you do a – you're our third caller, and we got a nice T-shirt for you. Well, thank you.
Danielle,
well, I tell you
can you
what,
do a direct call instead of the computer?
What's that?
Can you do a direct call instead of the computer, like you said?
I'm trying now. I'm trying now, and especially if it drops again.
Interested. Well, you know, we'll always pick the phone up and answer if you call. So
yeah,
we'll always get you back in, baby. So really quick, what are your topics for the day? I was thinking we could do a little holiday thing. I'm actually already tired from the holidays, and I've only been to 3 parties and a Christmas concert, and I'm like, wow, am I tired? And I got a lot of stuff too. I walked away with jams and jellies and homemade wines, and I haven't even a gift basket of gorgeousness because it's my birthday and the Christmas, and I got spoiled as I always do by my favorite aunts. And I was like, oh, I'm good. I'm good to go. And I bought myself a Downton Abbey chair at a reseller shop. I was like, we're redecorating the house. So I'm all done with the holidays. I'm ready to rest. But how are you guys doing on it? I saw you went to a nice party.
Yeah. I just did on Friday, I got to help judge a holiday light boat party, I guess, boat decorating contest. That was lots and lots of fun.
And we're talking yachts. These aren't boats. These are yachts. I saw the pictures. They're
gorgeous. Yeah, well, they are gorgeous.
Know, somebody's got to live it. Somebody's got to live that life because it can't go to waste. So why not you? I loved it.
Yeah. So hold on 1 second. I'm still trying to figure out how to do this. Because honestly, like, if this just keeps happening, I'm going to, you know.
It did. So, all right, it did. Carla, darling, are you there? Now, I'm so happy that you finally got a water heater hooked up at your place.
It is glorious.
I was so happy for you. Because can you imagine living, how many weeks have you been without hot water in the United States of America?
Technically, about 4 weeks. So,
that's horrible.
And maybe a little bit, it was off and on there for a little while because I was babying it along. Somebody helped me to light the pilot light, half a dozen, and then, you know, they walked me through it and showed me how. But then after, I think the 4th or 5th time, it wouldn't work anymore at all. So we were going to try to save the old hot water heater, which, you know, nobody does that anymore. So speaking of, you know, sort of the way society is now, we just throw stuff away. And I was told that if it isn't leaking, then, you know, repair it. So we were going to do that, and then I smelt water. So it was starting to leak. Anyway, so with some help, the help of friends, you know, there is some good to social media because you call on a community and you ask them, and they did. And so I was, you know, with a little bit of money I had and the generous love of the people in my community, I was able to get it installed today. And I took a shower, and it was wonderful.
I'm so glad for you. That was great. We have someone extra, too. We have background. Well, we got a lot of background noise. We need a mute. We got too much background.
Oh.
Well, there's
hi, John.
John. Yes. So when you're talking.
Yeah, I mean, I actually had a recent appliance story myself.
Because
I have background noise?
Generally speaking, and that was a lot. Yeah, so if you're not talking, just kind of mute.
Okay.
I
will.
Welcome.
But he was talking. So
you can.
Yeah.
You can unmute when you're talking.
Experience with my furnace. I had a furnace that was, I think, 50 years old, and I kept repairing it. For the past few years, I've been doing that, having to replace the thermal coupler, things like that over and over again, and I just finally recently came to a point where I couldn't repair it and had to get a new furnace. But also the new one is probably going to save me about half my heating bill because I live in Michigan. It gets up to like $400 a month sometimes in the winter. So it's going to save me a good chunk of money too. So, yeah, I just wanted to add that to the appliance story. So,
that's
great.
You end up saving money by replacing it with what they call energy efficient appliances. You know, it's not always easy to do, though, as you say. I mean, because a new one costs what a new one costs, and that sometimes can be prohibitive, and it was for me. And I got some help from the community to get it done. So did it already get installed, John? Is it already in?
Yeah, a few weeks ago. You can't really go without heat too long in Michigan this time of year.
No,
you can't.
You can't.
It doesn't work. No, so, yeah, I had to get it done.
Mel has asked for me to go ahead and do my report. Because she's having technical difficulties.
Can you guys hear me?
Now we can, yes.
Whoa. Okay, direct connect. So if it drops again, then it's just, you know, God telling me I shouldn't be doing this show today. I don't know, but hopefully this will work.
Well, let's cross our fingers. You sound very, very loud and clear. I like the connection. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, you know, with the state of the world, I wonder if we're not going to regain our lost skills of just refurbishing everything because of supply chain problems. And, you know, the one thing with appliances, I remember my older aunts talking about how they had the same refrigerator, the same stove. Everything lasted 20 years. It was 20 years before they had to replace anything, and then they had to buy something new. These things only last 5 years. They only last for the warranty. So they don't, like, make the things the way they used to. And I really wonder about these new energy-saving things, how durable they're going to be. What it's going to be, you know, you're going to have to buy a new, like, the unheard of replacing a water heater or a refrigerator every 5 years, which... You know, what would make people, old people, make their heads blow when you hear things like that? Because these things should last. And there's no excuse other than they have us wrapped around their fingers like consumers depending upon them. So the skills of learning how to redo things, I think, is a valiant thing to start learning how to do. And save parts. Save parts and could you rebuild something? I bet you could.
Yeah.
If you had to. So anyways, that's my thoughts on that. You got
I think also like basic skills like that, you know, that we've known for since basically the beginning of time, like chimneys, right? Like even building those kind of things. Like I thought about it a lot because Joe's dad, my father-in-law, you know, who just passed away last year or this year, he did that tuck pointing and, it's such a lost art. And I, you know, when I was looking at him and we knew that he was kind of going downhill and I'm like, this man is just a library of knowledge that is going to be gone soon. And, you know, not enough people are learning these arts and, you know, with apprenticeships and, you know, trade, education that, you know, what are we going to do, you know, in the coming generations? Like it really does worry me.
Me too.
Yeah. And unfortunately it doesn't worry the people it's really going to affect, which is the ones that are going to be there. Cause they just have their phones and looking at it as they walk into traffic. So how long
right, exactly. Or watching a DIY video on how to make a chimney.
Well, you know, they can have it. Amazon will bring me one, right?
Right, exactly.
Oh, my God. Oh, and I tell you, while we're on that subject real quick, if you have not seen all these poor Amazon workers, and they don't even have the Amazon trucks anymore. They have their own vehicles, and they're just all scrambling like these overworked little elves that are living in hell. just driving at night, and they're it's nonstop. And I'm like, I would not want to do that. This looks so hard and terrible. And they're farming out these subcontract things. A friend's done it with her husband, and they make a lot of money for the 3 hours they're doing this, but they're shoving everything in their car and delivering things. And I'm like, this is kind of a little bit out of hand when I'm thinking about how things usually are. You know, it's kind of like you have your stuff, and, you know, you acquire your stuff, and then at some point in time you have too much stuff, and you need to, like, unload it and get new stuff because you get tired of it, it breaks or whatever. But now it's like, look at the amount of things that with a snap, a press of a button, everything comes to you, and you just, you lose it. You won't even go, like, shopping or price comparing, or perhaps they do have that. I guess they do. But it's limited. Whatever Amazon provides you, here's your best price. But to actually feel things and kind of, do I really need this thing? Because this kind of looks like crap, you know? And once you buy it, it's like, oh, well, why did I waste my money? But it doesn't matter. It's like this instant gratification, just like ordering Chinese food. It's kind of like you should, you know, kick back and go shopping and eat ramen noodles for a second instead of spending
$20. Well, why do you suppose they keep doing these jobs, though?
Well, I think it's...
There's a lot of jobs out there right now.
Are there? I'm not,
help
I mean, I
signs all the time.
Well, what kind of jobs? Or let's see, manufacturing.
I don't know. I mean, just like going down the street, I see a lot of help wanted signs.
Well,
there's,
I think
stocking.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of people moving over more to like the techie jobs that are what are they called, like the Ubers and the you know, Uber Eats and Wag and, you know, these app-based businesses, you know, that's what I do. I do dog walking and boarding, and, you know, and I do work, you know, with Wag. I guess I don't work for Wag because I'm an independent contractor. But I think there's a, you know, the reason I think that there are so many help wanted signs is because so many people are moving over to these more independent businesses, and it gives them a lot more flexibility and freedom, in my opinion, to spend time with their families, to do that, you know, to have a more flexible life. So I think that might be contributing to some of this too, why there's so many help wanted signs. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm just saying, like, there was a discussion about how bad these Amazon jobs are that people are doing, that, you know, they're underpaid and everything, but I mean, I think there are a lot of other things people can do, and trucking still is looking like they're always short on truckers. Like, that's a really good job. So,
yeah.
I mean, maybe people don't know that there's options, I guess, but I just don't think there's any need for people to be doing a crappy job nowadays at this point in time.
Right, right.
Well, that's, you know, relative. Crappy job is very, depends, you know, because almost all of these jobs are crappy. They don't really fulfill you. Question of how hard, how difficult. I don't even know that they're not paid that well, but they're completely overworked. They have so much to be delivered, and the hours, and it's like, it's 24 hours.
Yeah, I had 4 Amazon packages delivered yesterday.
Yeah, and it's, you know, cold. It's just, you know, I'm like, oh God, what a horrible job. And then look at them, and they're like, they're stressed, and I'm like, oh, good Lord, I wouldn't want to do that. And I think they might be one of the most appealing companies right now to work for. But, you know, I'm sorry. I'm going to use the old it's a suck-ass job. I'm going to pull out my 1980s dictionary. It's one of those words. But even the trucking, John, aren't you overtaxed? Aren't they overloading you with the amount of routes and product, because there are so few truckers? Is it a little
Well, not really. And there's a lot of legal limitations, too. I can only even drive 11 hours in a day.
Oh, interesting.
That's good.
Yeah, so there's different when that's, so from the time that I start in the day, go on duty, I've got 14 hours. And then no matter what I do in that 14 hours, I've got to be off duty after 14 hours. So, mm-hmm. and within that 14 hours, I've got 11 hours of driving time. But I don't ever really do the whole 11 hours. I try to use more of them, most of my hours, because that more out, that means more miles and I get paid by the mile. So I want to use my hours. I don't have to. Usually on Fridays, actually, I don't, because it's kind of a long story, but I've usually got, sometimes I've got 4 or 5 hours left over on Friday night or Saturday morning, because I drive overnight, because I go in the Chicago area and I want to not deal with the traffic.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't think it's too bad. I do live in the truck, but 5 days a week, but I don't really mind that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in a semi-truck, you've got a bunk and everything, so.
Yeah. And you knew what it was. You knew what it was, and you either liked it or you didn't like it, and you accommodate, or you become acclimated to certain lifestyles.
Yeah.
Like,
and nowadays, it's like with unlimited data and the internet, you know, I'm doing stuff. So, you know, Sundays I come on the show here. I've got a podcast that or two of them actually that I'm doing. And then I've got a Discord group that I hang out with on with voice chat and talk to them a lot of the time. So I've still got people I communicate with. There's audiobooks, there's all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Nowadays it's not really, being in the truck doesn't mean I'm not doing anything because of the modern technology that we have.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of, let me just say, because that actually is a good segue into one of the topics I wanted to talk about today. There was a study that came out that basically they're trying to say that unvaccinated people are getting into more traffic accidents. And did you hear about this?
I saw that. And
I have not.
And you know why this is coming out? Because, you know, here in my little Chicagoland area, and I drive all day long during the day, there are more horrible accidents, and the rate of horrible accidents is like, what the hell? What is going on? I know what's going on. They have lost their actual – they're almost like – They're drunk. They're all the time drunk. We've got drunk drivers is what we got. And coming home last night on a 4-lane highway that is 30 miles an hour, and it has a cement meridian in the middle of it with little spaces to do U-turns, and it's been there forever. They have not changed this road at all. And on either side, there are stores, the Walgreens and the grocery store and the little, you know, little whatever it is. I don't live there anymore, but they've been here forever. And anybody that pulls into the Walgreens on this busy, it's a highway and it's a main street in North Aurora. I'll tell you what it's Route 31. And here comes out of the Walgreens into the two lanes going north. They didn't cross over the meridian to go into their two lanes that go south. No, they turned directly into me and almost like hit me. I'm honking and I'm like, number one, turn your lights on and you're get on the other side of you're basically driving down a one-way street right now, and you can't see. You almost hit me, and off. I'm like, this is just one of the many, many, many. They're driving like crazy people, but they're driving fast, and they're like. There was two fatalities last night. Smashed to bits, and there's fire trucks and ambulances. And this goes on all the time. And I'm like, and I've noticed that people are driving like they're absolutely fucking drunk. It's like, what's wrong with you? Since we got out of lockdown, and it's only gotten worse.
Yeah.
So
I drove by that accident last night.
It's like a smoke screen to cover up the fact that it's gotten worse. Why has it gotten worse? Well, it's kind of one of those side effects of the vaccine. But, oh, God, no, it's the people who aren't following the program that are the ones. I'm like, I think you're lying. That's what I'm thinking.
I talked to somebody that had some interesting things to say about the vaccine, and if we want to talk about that more, I don't know.
Yeah.
Guys,
yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, what he was saying... what he was saying was something to the effect of the way the vaccine works is that it weakens your immune system somehow and makes you more reliant on, you know, the modern medicine to fight viruses instead of your own immune system. His prediction was that over time, people that have been taking the vaccine are going to be more and more vulnerable to regular viruses like the flu and the common cold are going to affect them much more worse. Wait, more worse. Are going to affect them much more. And people without the vaccine are going to be less and less affected because the viruses will adapt to the weaker immune systems of the vaccinated people. So people that don't have it and whose immune systems have not been compromised by it will not get sick hardly at all going forward because the viruses, to include the common cold, flu, et cetera, will be adapted for a weaker immune system, and it'll actually be a pretty positive benefit for those that didn't take it. That was his theory. I don't know how that's going to roll out
theory. It is interesting. I don't know that it makes sense, though. You lost me towards the very end. So I'm like, that doesn't make sense. But I'm wondering if not, you know, this long COVID fog that they talk about, because they've been talking a lot about that lately, and that even children, young people, old people have the long COVID fog. I'm like, do you mean this – what it's almost as if they are not even aware of their surroundings, kind of like they're in their own video game. And you can kind of see it, but it's like, what's wrong with you? And then put them in a car, and you're like, the hell is wrong with you? And they're just like, you're not aware of the fact that you're, you know, traveling in the middle of the road or on the wrong side of the road or – and they're just, they have this glazed haze kind of thing going. And I'm really wondering if this is not, whatever they can do, they just want to, you know, spray the smoke screen to get you to, don't look over here at what's happening. That's nothing. We want you over here. And they'll make up the story. They're doing that on Twitter a lot, too. My friend is sending me some stuff. And what are they doing? It was deflecting from the FBI. I'd have to – oh, it's on my other phone. I can't get it to it. But it has to do with the FBI and Twitter, which is the hot topic now. But, you know, the FBI hasn't been doing anything wrong, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, is that because all eyes are on the FBI doing things wrong right now that we have to have these kind of posts? Absolutely. Counter disinformation. So I think this thing about the driving is so telling. I do remember a few months ago that Germany, I think it was Germany, had put out the "you cannot drive anymore. We're not giving license, or we're going to do a crackdown on vaccinated people are a hazard, and they don't want them driving." And that story went away. But I was like, hell to the yeah, because they don't know how to drive here. I've seen people drive across four lanes of highway that are like, you know, 40 mile an hour and across and right into a fucking wall, a wall that is like a sound barrier for a neighborhood. And I look at, and here's this little woman with a blue mask. It's broad daylight. And she's just standing there. The police, I was like, how the fuck is this? How did you manage to do this? At what point in time did you not just say, I can't go this way, I got to like turn and go that way because there's a big wall here. Just drove that car quietly and didn't smash anything, but just there she was, stuck in the bushes and up against, and it wasn't even a ditch or anything. It was just like over the bump, over the curb, but cross four lanes of highway, because everybody does that. And it's like, wow. And you're just, it's like, it just doesn't look right. It's out of place, all these little accidents. And there has to be, like, people that have to respond to these accidents have to be like, the hell? What the hell is going on? If you're thinking, because things like this didn't happen prior to the lockdown. We had a certain amount of, we had motor skills. That might be. Maybe the vaccine attacks the motor skill part of your brain, because it certainly, the spike proteins that continually are attacking the body and forming the blood clots and then killing the immune system and, you know, spiking all of whatever the weakness in your body is and maybe encouraging the cancers and the kidney failure and MS and whatever, hit the brain and the motor skills. Because without motor skills, you don't have coordination. And without coordination and motor skills, you really shouldn't be driving. And
right.
I think that's a new phenomenon. I do.
Well, I have a clip, I think. We'll see. Full of technical glitches today.
Can I just interrupt for 1 second?
Yeah.
Just interrupt for 1 second? The premise of the article that you mentioned, the question that they ask are people who are unvaccinated because they're irresponsible, that is the reason they're saying that supposedly people who are unvaccinated also they drive irresponsibly, and so that's why they get in more accidents.
I'd like to point out that a lot of truckers didn't take the vaccination, and to say that majority of truckers are irresponsible drivers is kind of silly.
It's very silly. Exactly. It's a dumb article. It's a dumb premise. Okay, just like half the articles that have come out about COVID, so that skateboarding causes blood clots, stress causes blood clots, so on. And Danielle could probably write 15 articles that they've come out to explain away what the vaccine is doing to the human body.
My favorite one is your vagina.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you tell about that, please?
Yeah, that cold weather causes blood clots in the vagina.
Yes. So the premise of the thesis for the research is that because unvaccinated people take risks, such as not, you know, getting the jab, that is the reason to get in more car accidents. And so
More so than drunk drivers is what they're trying to say.
And it's bullshit, excuse the expression.
You know,
I thought I would chime in with that.
Goebbels would be proud. I tell you, this is a propaganda campaign.
But I think
there's
people that will believe that article.
They're the ones that believe anything. If it's told to them, it must be true. There's a lot of critical thinkers out there.
It's ridiculous.
I'm finding out there's more people rolling their eyes at this shit than there are actually believing it. They can keep putting this stuff out, and we can find it and read it and be like, what the hell? But the majority of people that even, they're like, oh, this is crap. I couldn't believe who was telling me that you just simply cannot find anything that's true on TV anymore. Nothing. It's all propaganda.
Yeah,
I was like,
totally.
Wow, my God. The veil has been lifted. Some spark happened somewhere, and their eyes were all, like, opened up, and they can see what's going on.
Yeah, totally.
And then here comes more with, no, here comes more propaganda, because they just seem to count on the fact that if they say it, if it's a word salad of crap, like, not to cut you down, John, but that theory of whoever gave it to sounded great till the very end, and that's how everything else that they put out, whether it be a press conference or Mr. Biden, it's like, what? What you just are like, what did you say? You didn't make any sense. Do you remember? You didn't make any sense. Can you tell me more things? Can you fill in the blanks? No, that's what we told you. Believe us, it's true. And that's how they do it.
And don't you dare question it.
Exactly.
Well, I'm not insulted. I was saying that it was someone else's theory anyway, so.
I actually see some merit in it, but not to get too off subject, I would like to play this video, and then about this study, and then we'll talk about it on the other side of it. Ready?
3, 2, 1, boom.
3, 2, 1.
If you haven't hated the unvaxxed enough, they have a new reason for you to hate them. They came up with another reason. Even though someone being unvaccinated has nothing to do with you and your disease, if someone else gets vaccinated, it doesn't do anything for you. If you get vaccinated, according to the YouTube scientists, it will slow the spread and contraction, and it will keep you from getting seriously ill, hospitalized, or death. That's what the YouTube scientists say.
I've had 4 boosters. I never felt better. I'm going for a 5th one after this. This headline, by the way, this is a good one. I ran by Kyle Dunnigan. I make them shows with because he doesn't follow this. And I had no idea what this meant when I saw this, okay? And I asked him, and he guessed it. It was actually scary to me that he guessed it.
So the headline is, people who skip their COVID vaccine are at a higher risk of traffic accidents, according to a new study. I knew exactly what this was when I saw it. They're like, they're going to try to say that the people who are unvaccinated get in more car accidents than people who are vaccinated. And I suspected why they were going to say it, too. And it's exactly what they say. Okay. Note that the story is being presented by CVS Health, which has no vested interest in people getting vaccines.
Presented by CVS Health? Oh my God! So it's just an ad? Okay.
No, they're advertising on this news story.
Oh, I see.
During the summer of 2021, Canadian researchers. Well, it does say presented by.
Right.
But, yeah.
So I think it's a little bit more than just a regular. During the summer of 2021, Canadian researchers examined the encrypted government health records of more than 11 million adults, 16% of whom hadn't received their COVID vaccine.
Wait,
what does that mean?
Encrypted government health records.
Right? I don't know what that means. Encrypted government health records. They found that the unvaccinated people were 72% more likely to be involved in a severe traffic crash in which at least one person was transported to the hospital than those who were vaccinated. That's similar to the increased risk of car crashes for people with sleep apnea, though only about half that of the people who abuse alcohol, researchers found. So they're worse than drunk drivers, the unvaccinated. They're horrible. That's what they're saying. That's what they're saying. I'm not saying that. The excess risk of car crash posed by the unvaccinated drivers exceeds the safety gains from modern automobile engineering advances and also imposes risks on other road users. See, they're not unvaccinated people. They're not only threatening you in your regular life. They're threatening you driving around. They're a threat to you everywhere.
I miss that this was done in Canada, and it's starting to make more sense to me how some horrific thing like this could even be an idea. It's because it was in Canada.
It's just like they say, hey, you know, marijuana is legal now. They're going to be way more car crashes. And then they actually do this studies and there's less. And but then, the beer company funds a study that says there's more. You know?
I thought you were going to tell me that the gains we made from legalized marijuana have been taken away by the unvaxxed.
Probably. Of course, skipping a COVID vaccine does not mean that someone will get into a car crash. Really? Thanks for fucking pointing that out. Instead, the authors theorize that people who resist public health recommendations might also neglect basic road safety guidelines.
That's what Kyle guessed. And how he said it, he goes, because they don't follow rules.
That's what I guess.
He goes, they don't follow laws. I'm like, it wasn't a law to get vaccinated, dude. That was a, what do you mean don't follow laws? But people are conditioned
That's right. To
be obeyers, you know?
Because you know, rich people in Porsches never break traffic laws. I've never seen someone driving a Porsche or a Ferrari or a BMW or a Mercedes. I've never seen those people speeding. Have you?
I've never even seen them misbehaving in any form.
Rich people don't misbehave. It's why would they ignore the rules of the road? Distrust of the government, a belief in freedom, misconceptions of daily risk, faith in natural protections, antipathy toward regulation, poverty. There it is. That's what I mean. Poverty. poverty. Not richness doesn't make you want it. So again, that's what I'm saying. People in BMWs and Porsches and Mercedes and Ferraris, they never break traffic rules because they're rich, according to this. It's only poverty.
Right.
Doesn't say wealth. Distrust of government makes you ignore rules. A belief in freedom. So you don't have a belief in freedom?
I never met these people that said, I believe in freedom, and I that's why I don't obey traffic lights.
Right.
I've never...
I don't know who... So these people who... So the opposite of this would be good. Then you trust government and you don't believe in freedom. Is that what you're saying? Is that a better person? Someone who trusts government and doesn't believe in freedom.
Well, that's the Canadian aspect of it.
Yeah,
it's like that's when America, like distrust of government is like a real American. That's really crazy.
Yeah.
But this is probably a screw you on insurance. I bet the long.
Look at this, misconceptions of daily risks. You mean like the misconceptions of my risk from the COVID virus? Because, you know, when they did those studies, Democrats in America thought that you had a 50% risk of going to the hospital if you got COVID. That is a misconception of your daily risk. When your risk of hospitalization was actually under 1%. So it turns out this is unbelievable bullshit.
A bunch of these seem like poverty, too, by the way. The misconception of daily risk. That sounds like a misconception of what you're looking at, which is people that got nothing to lose. And then faith in natural protect. That's, this all sounds like poor people stuff, all of it.
Antipathy towards regulation, poverty, misinformation, a lack of resources.
What, poverty again?
So get poverty again. So if you're poor twice, if you're poor and you have a lack of resources, you're going to ignore the rules. But not if you're rich. Not if you're rich and college educated, because all those guys on Wall Street are all fucking criminals. That's weird. And personal beliefs are potential reasons for proposed by the authors. The findings are significant enough that primary care doctors should consider counseling unvaccinated patients on traffic safety. This is real. They wrote this. That's real. That's a real thing. That's happening right now in your culture. Someone wrote that in a major magazine.
I mean, even for a Canadian nonsense story, they're pushing it a little bit.
And insurance companies might base changes to insurance policies on vaccination data.
That's what that is. That's what that is. And then they'll use the tracking of all your stuff. And like, well, you had a hamburger today, too. And you did
I thought the unvaccinated were all supposed to die of fucking COVID.
No, they're still out there.
They're still out there, though,
cluttering up the roads with their freedom driving.
The findings suggest that unvaccinated adults need to be careful indoors and other people in and outside with surrounding traffic. Can you believe this? Whoever authored this is a mental case who needs a team of psychiatrists working round the clock.
This is
considered normal now.
I remember when years ago, and some idiot was pushing these studies on me that I did read. I had to pay for them. And it was all about how disparagement humor leads to, like, it was crazy. It was just as big a stretch as this. Neil Brennan never came out. He interviewed the guy from Madison, Wisconsin, of course, that did the study. You immediately see the guy's like, I'm going to be generous and say it's just Asperger's and how he thinks. And, like, so it's some nerd like that that's has the prearranged destination they want to get to, and they're doing like what we did in Bible school to come to a pre... This is the exact same thing.
This isn't the first time that researchers have examined the link between behavior and vaccination status among young adults. Does the unvaxxed, do they have stronger hearts? I wonder. Was that a correlation? I don't know. I'm just throwing and spitballing. Among young adults, a 2021 study published in the Journal of Bioeconomics found a correlation between self-reported risky driving and having skipped their flu vaccine. Are you out of...
Bioeconomics?
Are you out of your fucking minds?
I like that, though. That's what we have instead of medicine now is bioeconomics.
Yes. It examined the survey responses of more than 100,000 Canadians.
The Journal of Bioeconomics. I'll bet you anything that's a trade publication to come up with crap like this to get stuff pushed through.
So the next time I drive past a car accident, I'm going to lean out the window and go, hey, you better get vaxxed, asshole.
Next time, get vaxxed. Well, there's going to be a lot more accidents now that healthy people are just dropping dead, apparently, from climate change.
Climate change.
It affects the heart.
Certainly does. Wow. So these people, again, it's you understand that Hitler didn't have that hard of a time getting people to go along with him. Because that's what this is.
Having skipped their flu vaccine.
The flu vaccine and the COVID-19 vaccine, totally different vaccines.
And totally. It turns out you suck at driving both ways.
Yeah. The flu vaccine, I'm going to guess, has decades of long-term studies.
Well, I've had so many boosters personally, I could probably safely drunk drive if I wanted to. I don't have a car, but I'm boosted all up to the gills. I do how many drinks I had, I have a booster for each third drink.
Hey, we're doing live stand-up comedy in Los Angeles, December 9th, 16th, 23rd, and 30th, and we're going to be in Tempe, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, Nashville. Go to jimmydore.com for a link for all those tickets. See you there.
Wow. Okay. Mom, do you want to start?
Sure. I'm ready if you're ready for me. But I love Jimmy Dore. Freaking hilarious. It's absurd. The study was absurd and all of it was absurd. Okay. So I am going to do the Twitter files for the good news.
Oh, wait, hold on. I was saying comment on the video. Let's let Elizabeth and John comment first, and then we'll be ready for you right after that.
Mm-hmm. I'm ready.
Okay. Elizabeth?
Well, I am loving him, those damn freedom drivers. The first part, he was talking about this government database that they have, made me think about when they first started this and we either complied or we lost our job. And then they gave us the option to do the testing. And we had to register all within 5 days. We had to get all this done and get in their databanks, which one we were. And there was this mess. It was almost like Black Friday, because we only have like 5 computers, and bus drivers are not the most tech savvy, and I'm the worst one because I need someone to do all my stuff for me. So we're all standing in line. These people have their cars all laminated, and they're waving them like, here, get me, I got to get out of here. And I'm wondering if how far reaching this track and trace program that they had going, which kind of failed because they couldn't get us all to do it or figure out how to keep us out of society and had to give us a safe space of testing. What kind of a data bank they have that they can quickly determine at a scene of a crime whether or not you've been vaccinated or not, and what kind of a secret government tally sheet they have of the vaccinated or unvaccinated. And that was the most disturbing part of that story for me.
Yeah.
I'm loving him more and more every time I hear you do a clip of him. He's fantastic. But it's funny how quickly, and then the vaccine thing, like the flu vaccine, they've been trying to get adults to buy into any form of vaccination program. And they missed the boat because they only had like 8 vaccines that we were required to have when we were in school. And then they got the kids with the 63 by the time they're 2. But that gap of years, and this is adult population, how can we get them vaccinated? They started throwing out that flu shot. And it was kind of like, it was there for the old people, and they were just trying to coerce everyone that it's better for you. You won't get sick, blah, blah, blah. Did you get your flu shot? They hand out the little ridiculous red noses at the Walgreens that if you went in and got your flu shot, you get this little – and how funny. You look like a clown when you walk out of there, but I got my flu shot. that was a kind of a propaganda program. It wasn't, like you said, it was never mandated, but they certainly wanted us to be socially responsible person to get these shots. And now I do believe that probably the effects of the flu shot are just as bad as this other COVID vaccine, because everyone that gets these shots, they would always get the flu shot, they get deathly ill. But they have this false security that I won't get the flu, but they got really sick from the shot. That was not a really good selling point. And that's why very small sliver of population would ever do this. But the fact that they continually try to find some sort of a motivation factor to try to get you into their program of having something put into your body that you really don't need. Because the marvelous thing about the immune system is that if you feed it good food and you rest and have good, exercise, fresh air, sunshine, your immune system becomes strong and you can tackle anything. But that, I guess, is not, it's almost heresy. It's heresy in the day and age.
Well, right. And what did they do? Yeah. All of those things we know are good for us, fresh air, sunlight, vitamin C, all of these things. And what did they tell us to do in COVID, right? They said, stay inside, don't go outside, don't get fresh air, spray Lysol on everything.
Yeah. Chemicals, pizza.
Close the gym.
Breathe the air in your house. Don't open the windows and don't go outside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Keep the liquor stores open, but close the gyms.
And live in constant fear.
Right. John, what do you think?
I'm really wondering if there's some kind of interest there in getting people more and more dependent on modern medicine. Because more dependent, because I can't make a flu shot at home. I can't make a COVID shot. And getting people less dependent on their own natural immune system. I don't know. I think there's some merit to the argument that the more you rely on these shots and whatnot to fight off viruses, the less your body is going to be able to naturally do that. And long term, is it going to turn out that people that keep taking all of the shots and everything, like their immune systems just become so weak that they can't even handle like a common cold anymore without some kind of modern medicine shot or pill or something?
Yeah, antibiotic or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, for every little thing, and that's something where. Going forward, there could be a measure of control implemented. It's like, okay, well, do what we want you to do, or you're not getting your little shots and whatnot. Take drink the Kool-Aid or else, kind of a deal. Sign up for the card or take the chip or whatever it's going to be. To get your medical treatment that you now need because your immune system no longer works.
Yeah, and they were even implementing these fear tactics of, you wouldn't be able to get your tax return filed, or you wouldn't be able to get your government welfare checks.
Yeah, I even saw there's going to be a lot in the hospital if you get sick.
That what?
I've heard people say that. I don't know if that's actually happening, but I've definitely heard people
think that. No, it's not happening. It's not happening except for in cases like organ transplants. Like if you're on the donor list and you don't, and you're not vaccinated, you can't get your organ transplant because of the risks, And it's like, well, what do you mean these people are going to die if they don't get their organ transplants? So – What are you, you know, but that there were people who actually died on the list, on the organ transplant list, because they were not vaccinated or because the person who was donating an organ was not vaccinated, you know. And so, and you know, it was being pushed in Hollywood that I don't want to see people in the hospital. How about this? If you don't get a COVID vaccine, then you know, we're not going to treat you in the hospital. Like, that was just it wasn't done, yeah. But it was being, you know, heavily pushed in Hollywood.
It was put out there. Yeah. It definitely was.
Okay, yeah. Well, on that note, it is 4 o'clock, and you know that we do the 4 o'clock hour is for the good news. So, Mom, if you're ready, take it away.
Okay. Danielle insisted that because last week it was an information-packed hour, I was tired by the time I got done with it, that I really didn't cover Twitter Files 3 and Twitter Files 4. Well, I talked about what was in it, but she's right. I didn't. We're up to 6 now, so I hope to get it all covered. And what they're finding is, I want everyone to make sure you're sitting down and holding onto the arms of your chair, that our government is Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter is our government. Twitter has been infiltrated. Remember last week I told you that a very large portion of the top executives at Twitter were either, which no one is ever really ex-FBI or ex-CIA. They're not.
Yeah.
They put on their quote-unquote LinkedIn and say, you know, I separated to go into, you know, the private sector or whatever. They never do. Okay, so that's a lie, first of all. But many of them made this seamless transition from being a cop or an intelligence agency employee directly to the top of Twitter. It's amazing. They just, I guess maybe they figured that was a good employee pool for them. Is a joke, because obviously there's a reason. But so Twitter is the government, and government is Twitter. So that's kind of what we discovered in 3 and 4. So in at thread 3 was the removal of Donald Trump, part 1, October 2020 to January 6th. So that's what Twitter Files 3 covered. The world knows much of the story of what happened between riots at the Capitol on January 6th and the removal of President Donald Trump from Twitter on January 8th. We'll show you what hasn't been revealed, the erosion of standards within the company in the months. So keep this in mind. They're telling us that they removed him because they were afraid of potential violence. That's what will happen throughout this process, that from their quote-unquote Slack channel messages. There are people that saying, look, you can't do this, and they're making it up as they go along. Truth is that they were working on this months before January 6th, starting in October of 2020. So what happens in October of 2020? You guys remember? Pop quiz.
Alex Jones got taken down?
Well, actually, that happened a lot sooner. No, that's when the Hunter Biden laptop story started.
Right.
So within the upper echelons of Twitter, they're trying to figure out how to get rid of Donald Trump and his voice on Twitter, because he's talking about the Hunter Biden laptop. And keep this in mind, it's net for Donald Trump, it's never been about Hunter Biden and his crack-smoking, hooker-loving, child porn. That is not what he was highlighting. What he was highlighting was Joe Biden has been engaging in since he was the vice president. God knows he was doing it when he was a senator as well. They all do. But on this laptop was the proof. It had the receipts. So and it was actually... even before that, they wanted to get rid of Donald Trump. If you remember, after the 2016 election that shocked the world when Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton. No one expected it. Google, we have video from the Google company. Okay, so Google. Who owns Google? Does anybody know? This one is not a pop quiz because I really don't know. Who owns Google?
The Alphabet Corporation.
Alphabet Corporation.
I bet it's National Health State.
And Google is one of the most. Google is. I would opine that Google is the most powerful company organization in the entire world. Because what people see goes through Google, period, end of story. All these social media companies, that's their parent company, is Google.
Mm-hmm.
There was video from their meeting, their staff meeting after the 2016 election, and they're on video saying, this must never happen again, and we're going to fix it. That's paraphrasing. But very definitely, they were shocked, they were sad, they were crying about Donald Trump winning the election and his ability to, because remember, he was an upstart. And no one that they haven't picked has become president for in living memory. And so all of a sudden, he shocked the world, and the Google executive said, we will make sure this doesn't happen again. In their own words, they said that. So we can say that this, you know, that all this started in Twitter in October. It went on the entire time he was president, for goodness sakes. And there were articles after articles after articles written about how they were going to fortify the 2020 election. And they wrote one after the 2020 election talking about the ways that they did. Mark Zuckerberg, the ABC company, the Google, all of them, which, again, you're absolutely correct, Elizabeth. Google is the government, the world government, as far as I'm concerned, not just the United States government. So it says, we'll show you what hasn't been revealed, the erosion of standards within the company months before January 6th, decisions by high-ranking executives to violate their own policies and more against the backdrop of ongoing documented interaction with federal agencies. The first installment covers the period before the election through January 6th. And then Michael Schellenberger, the one I couldn't find last week, is going to do part two. Tomorrow, Schellenberger will detail the chaos inside Twitter on January 7th. On Sunday, Barry Weiss will reveal the secret internal communications from the key date of January 8th. So he goes on to highlight their Slack channel. As stated in our policy, it is clear that another account is being used for the purposes of evading a ban. It is also subject to suspension. They prepared to ban future presidents and White Houses, perhaps even Joe Biden. The new administration, says one exec, will not be suspended by Twitter unless absolutely necessary. So they're already talking about banning one world leader and thinking about doing others. So they got a little bit of power, and these people are having a moment, shall we say. Twitter executives removed Trump in part over what one executive called the context surrounding actions by Trump. Context, this is in quotes, surrounding actions by Trump. So they've decided that they're going to massage this a little bit because he's the sitting president of the United States. They can't do that. So in the meantime, here's our quick take. The decision on whether to pull that particular tweet or use that as a last straw for Trump depends on many factors, including the overall context and narrative in which that tweet lives, okay? So they're making it up as they go along. That's what the entire Twitter part three is about, is how they decide to take him down and to remove his account, a sitting president of the United States. So one of the things that they were deciding on was, and let's see, so this one was October 9th, Trump tweeted, breaking news, 50,000 Ohio voters getting wrong absentee ballots, out of control, a rigged election. So this is the one that they were, will this one do it? Do you think this one's bad enough? Yoel Roth says, a rigged election would be enough to be a violation, right? Question mark. If the claim, in fact, were inaccurate, yes. The reply, turns out it was true. All those Ohio residents did get tainted ballots. So they said, oh, shoot, we can't use that one. Dang it. It goes on and on and on about all the different ways that they're trying to finagle and figure out how they can ban a sitting president from their platform. Okay. So that's why when I said, Danielle, that I had covered it, I did. Next was the removal of Donald Trump. This is Michael Schellenberger, the one I couldn't find. Pressure builds. Twitter executives build the case for a permanent ban. Now they're going through. On January 7th, senior Twitter execs create justifications to ban Trump. This is what they're deciding on. This is their, you know, how you have a meeting and you have a little agenda. They've got bullet points, and this is their agenda. On January 7th, senior Twitter execs create justifications to ban Trump, seek a change of policy for Trump alone, distinct from other political leaders. Next, express no concern for the free speech or democracy implications of the ban. This was the agenda items on their for their team meeting. It's disgusting. So catching up, please, part one, part two, part three. It says, for years, Twitter had resisted calls to ban Trump. Blocking a world leader from Twitter, it wrote in 2018, would hide important information and hamper necessary discussion around their words and actions. But after the events of January 6th, the internal and external pressure on Twitter CEO Jack grows. Okay, so this is where I told you that Jack Dorsey was down in some, you know, desert island, you know, drinking Mai Tais, and they're going back and forth with Jack Dorsey trying to get him to agree with them that they should ban Trump. Ross colleagues query about incitement to violence. So this is how they did it. They said that banned him because of the potential for future violence. So that was the rule. They made up the rule, and they banned him on January 8th. So that's when they took his account down and a couple of 100,000 other Trump supporters, including mine. So that was on January 8th. So here we go. We have Twitter Files Part 5, which is the removal of Trump from Twitter. This Barry Weiss did this one. She said, on the morning of January 8th, President Donald Trump, with one remaining strike before being at risk of permanent suspension from Twitter, tweets twice. These are the tweets that they hid from the American people. So they can tell you all day long why they did it, the potential for future violence, but what he was tweeting on January 8th certainly isn't a red flag or a dog whistle or whatever they want to call it. At 6:48 a.m., Donald Trump tweeted that 75,000 great American patriots who voted for, 75 million, excuse me, great American patriots who voted for me, America First, and Make America Great Again will have a giant voice long into the future. They will not be disrespected or treated unfairly in any way, shape, or form, with three exclamation points. The next one was, for all of you who have asked, I will not be going to the inauguration on January 20th. Those are his last two tweets before they permanently banned him. Does anybody see an incitement to violence in those tweets?
Nope.
Okay. So that's why they supposedly, those last two tweets and, of course, all the other tweets, blah, 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 that they claim caused people to be hurt is the reason why they say they banned Donald Trump. Can you guys hang on just one second? I'm going to put you on mute. Okay. So in their own policy, it says our mission is to provide a forum that enables people to be informed and to engage with their leaders directly. This was in 2019. Twitter's aim was to protect the public's right to hear from their leaders and to hold them to account. Even so they went against their own policy. But after January 6th, as Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger have documented, pressure grew both inside and outside of Twitter to ban Trump. There were dissenters within Twitter. One guy says, maybe because I'm from China, said one employee on January 7th, I deeply understand how censorship can destroy the public conversation. This is a Chinese guy saying that what we're getting ready to do is wrong. It's a communist regime tactic. But voices like that one appear to have been a distinct minority within the company. Across Slack channels, many Twitter employees were upset that Trump hadn't been banned earlier. So there's a whole thread on that Slack channel saying, why isn't he gone already? We have to do the right thing and ban this account, said one staffer. It's pretty obvious he's going to try to thread the needle of incitement without violating the rules. Did you hear that? Let me read that again. It's pretty obvious that he's going to try to thread the needle of incitement without violating the rules. So they all knew that Trump hadn't broken the rules. They lied. And they took him down anyway. It took 3 years, but I've lost faith. So this is one employee saying they've been considering this for the entire time he's been president, trying to figure out how to ban this guy. So, in the early afternoon of January 8th, the Washington Post published an open letter signed by over 300 Twitter employees. Here we go. To CEO Jack Dorsey, demanding Trump's ban. So keep in mind, remember who I just told you the employees are. They're freaking CIA spooks and FBI spooks, all of them. NSA, okay? In these top-level positions, and they're finally putting the hammer down on the president. And again, they've been pissed off since 2016 trying to figure out how to get rid of this guy because he's effing up their game. What was his first priority? Save the children. Can't have him messing with that, can you?
Nope.
So, but the Twitter staff assigned to evaluate quickly concluded that Trump had not violated Twitter policies. I think we'd have a hard time saying this is incitement, wrote one staffer. It's pretty clear he's saying the American patriots are the ones who voted for him and not terrorists. We can call them that, right? From Wednesday. This is how they think of us, the American people, my employees. Okay, my government is they're my employee, and they're trying to figure out how to stop my voice from being heard, those pesky peasants. Another staffer agreed, don't fight an angle here. So throughout the entire thread, and I'm not going to belabor the point, but all of it, it talks about these people going back and forth about how to make it fit for Trump. One of them, Muhammad Buhari, the president of Nigeria, incited violence against pro-Biafra groups. Those of us in the fields for 30 months who went through this war, he wrote, will treat them in the language they understand. Twitter deleted the tweet but didn't ban Buhari. So he was inciting violence on Twitter, the leader of Nigeria, but they didn't ban him. So she's using showing us examples of all the other world leaders that have said a whole hell of a lot worse than Trump, but they didn't ban them or even talk about it. 2 hours later, Twitter executives host a 30-minute all-staff meeting. Jack Dorsey and Vijaya Gadde answer staff questions as to why Trump wasn't banned yet. But they make some employees angrier. Multiple tweets, Twitter employees, have quoted the banality of evil, suggesting the people implementing our policies are like Nazis following orders, relays Joel Roth to a colleague, okay? So they're pissed off. They're watching, you know, some of them are the good guys. They're like, you can't do this shit. And obviously we know who won that argument. So that one's done. Part six. So Part 6 came out the 16th. This one is Twitter, the FBI subsidiary. This is where they have the receipts of who's actually running this company. So there were, you know, people on Twitter answering, finding out about these top executives, but now Matt Taibbi, it brought the receipts about who they are. The Twitter files are revealing more every day about how the government collects, analyzes, and flags your social media content. Twitter's contact with the FBI was constant and pervasive, as if it were a subsidiary. Between January 2020 and November 2022, there were over 150 emails between the FBI and former Twitter Trust and Safety Chief Yoel Roth. This guy was a bad guy, Yoel Roth. That's the same one that was talking about little girls and, you know, messing and consenting to have sex with their teachers and on and on.
Yeah.
Some are mundane, like the San Francisco agent Elvis Chan. By the way, he's already been deposed by the attorneys general for the Louisiana and Missouri case. Elvis Chan, remember that name. Wishing Roth a happy new year, along with a reminder to attend our quarterly call next week. Others are requests for information into Twitter users related to active investigations. But a surprisingly high number are requests by the FBI for Twitter to take action on election misinformation, quote, end quote, even involving joke tweets from low follower accounts. The FBI's social media focused task force, listen to this, social media focused task force known as FTIF, even has a cute little acronym, created in the wake of in the wake of the 2016 election. So this little get together has been happening, as I pointed out to you, since 2016. They said, we're not going to let this guy run again, no matter what. We're going to take him down. And we all knew about the Russia hoax and the Ukraine hoax and the you know, all the other crap that they tried to throw at him. But in the meantime, this is what they were doing. The FBI's social media focused task force, known as FTIF, created in the wake of the 2016 election, swelled to 80 agents, Twitter, to identify alleged foreign influence and election tampering of all kinds. Federal intelligence law enforcement reached into Twitter, including the Department of Homeland Security, which partnered with security contractors. Which partnered with security contractors. So the FBI didn't really want to have its hands too dirty in this one, so they hired some intermediaries and think tanks to pressure Twitter to moderate content. It's no secret the government analyzes bulk data. We all know that. We're not happy about it, right? Of all sorts and purposes, anything from tracking terror suspects to making economic forecasts. The Twitter files show something new. Agencies like the FBI and DHS regularly sending social media content to Twitter through multiple entry points pre-flagged for moderation. What stands out is the sheer quantity of reports from the government. Some are aggregated from public hotlines, sure. So supposedly the FBI gets a call on this election day threat, okay? They have a phone number, send a tip. And then they supposedly get these phone calls, and then they take these tips and they run them through Twitter. Hey, there's a problem with this particular account. See what you can do. So hello, Twitter contacts. The master canine quality of the FBI's relationship to Twitter comes through in this November 2022 email, November 2022, in which the FBI San Francisco is notifying you it wants action on four accounts. And there's a list of these four accounts. Best regards, Fred, FBI, SF. But he just calls himself Fred. Like me and Yoel are on a first name basis. Twitter personnel in the case went on to look for reasons to suspend all four accounts. They were trying to figure out what, you know, how can we suspend these accounts, including Froma, whose tweets are almost all jokes. Right, she's got memes. She's got one—the picture of those railroad cars out in the middle of the bay waiting to get unloaded. That's the kind of tweets they were going after. Because it made that supply chain problem made Joe Biden look bad. Had nothing to do with foreign interference. Nothing to do. These were just American citizens making jokes on Twitter. And so Twitter personnel is like, yeah, you know, it's not too bad. We should probably, they're just jokes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just to show the FBI hyper-intrusive in both directions, they also asked Twitter to review a blue-leaning account for a different joke, except here it was even more obvious. So-and-so, her name's Claire Foster, PhD, who kids a lot. She was kidding. So hers didn't get taken down, but the other one did. Anyone who cannot discern obvious satire from reality has no place making decisions for others or working for the feds, said Claire Foster, PhD, when told about the flagging. So then next we have a long list. Okay, it looks like there's about 50 names on there. One of them was one of the Baldwin brothers. His didn't get banned. More names. So they keep sending stuff. Okay, flag this, ban this, shadow ban that. On American citizens. And there's actually, this tweet thread went to 31 with all the evidence of the feds put their fingers on the scale of Twitter. He put out a supplemental yesterday. Was it yesterday? To Twitter file 6. This was on December 18th. I guess it was today. In July of 2020, San Francisco FBI agent Elvis Chan tells Twitter executive Yoel Roth to expect written questions from the Foreign Influence Task Force, FITF, the interagency group that deals with cyber threats. Ahead of the meeting, I'd like you to let you know what we're going to talk about, Elvis Chan tells him. The questionnaire authors seem displeased with Twitter for implying in a July 20th briefing that you indicated you had not observed much recent activity from official propaganda actors on your platform. So that's because they banned everybody. So, okay, and I'm going to end with this because I don't want to bore everybody with all of these details. So what's happening here is FBI says, hey, give us some stuff. Why? And Twitter writes back, well, we haven't seen any. FBI off. They're like, what do you mean there isn't any? So you better find some. The problem is by this time in August of let's see, when is this meeting? July of 2020, they banned most of the accounts. So there wasn't anything to find. One would think that would be good news, Matt Taibbi says. The agency seemed to feel otherwise. They're pissed off because Twitter says, no, we're good. We're not seeing any of this stuff anymore or very, very little. Chan underscored that there was quite a lot of discussion with the USIC to get clarification from your company, he wrote, referring to the United States Intelligence Community. So they all are jumping on Twitter because they're not sending them enough information anymore. That's the supplemental. So the FBI put out a statement about the information that Matt Taibbi put in 5 and 6 and the supplemental. They said, we regularly monitor social media for foreign influence. And everybody blasted them to that's bullshit because these are all American citizens you're going after. So they're trying to cover their bases. Ted Lieu jumped in the middle of Matt Taibbi this morning as well and said, we've known that the FBI was doing this the whole time. We told them it was okay. It's right there on their website. So we're at that stage of the game where people like Ted Lieu and Adam Schiff are jumping in and saying, well, of course they're doing that. They're monitoring for foreign, you know, bad actors. Well, no, that's not what they're doing. And Matt Taibbi fired back and Elon Musk fired back.
I knew they were going to do this shit. I knew it. I knew they were going to jump in. Yep. Well, we've known it the whole time. Right mm-hmm. after, for because years they've been saying, it's not happening. You're just being a crazy conspiracy theorist. And now all of a sudden the story changes to, what do you mean? We've always known this.
We're at that stage, and Matt Taibbi fired back to Ted Lieu Okay, so I'm going to read that to you guys real quick because that one was kind of important. So hold on.
And I'm not bored. I can't speak for everybody else, but I think this is awesome.
Okay. In the latest edition of Twitter Files, we learned that this is from Sam Janney, who's one of my favorite humans on Twitter. She's the editor-in-chief for Twitchy. I get a lot of my information from this particular little site. Danielle's aware because I send them to her. In the latest edition of Twitter Files, we learned that the FBI was spending a good bit of time perusing social media and sending certain accounts to Twitter to handle, in quotes. Isn't it fascinating how the conspiracy theories we've all been talking about for years now were actually true and not conspiracies at all? Question mark. So Matt Taibbi tweeted, and this pissed this jumped in their shorts. Watch this. Instead of chasing child sex predators or terrorists, the FBI has agents, lots of them, analyzing and mass flagging social media posts. Not as part of any criminal investigation, but as a permanent end surveillance operation. People should not be okay with this. Well, we're not. Gosh, you'd think the FBI agents were scouring Twitter in the first place, looking for people sharing memes and jokes that they could have at least checked for, you know, child sex predators or terrorists. This is about Sam Janney editorializing. Surely they could have multitasked just a little bit. Ted Lieu decided to chime in. Here we go. For whatever reason. Dear at Matt Taibbi, I'm on the House Judiciary Committee that has oversight over the FBI, and you are lying. The FBI has lots of agents chasing child sex predators and terrorists. Please stop undermining and lying about federal law enforcement. Matt Taibbi fired back. Being on that committee, you should know, and these are great questions, how much money has been spent and how many DHS, DOJ employees have been assigned to monitoring and flagging social media. Next question, why is the FBI asking for location information about ordinary Americans and media outlets like RSBN Network? Next, Elon Musk jumped in. Congressman Lieu, were you aware of this program and did you approve it? Simple questions require simple answers. The congressman responded, Dear Elon Musk, a simple answer, have you tried reading the FBI's mission from 2017 program? Here we go. This is where, well, of course they've been doing it the whole time. The FBI considers strategic engagement with U.S. technology companies, including threat indicator sharing, to be important combating foreign influence actors. So, and now they're jumping bad on Ted Lieu. Did Congress give them that authority? If so, can you cite the legislation where you said it's okay to do this? The FBI wasn't chartered to engage with U.S. technology companies to monitor and sanction American citizens practicing their right to free speech. Where exactly do they get that authority without warrants? So they're asking the right questions. So you were aware of the FBI's unconstitutional infringement on speech and you did approve it? Question mark. Be careful, Ted Lieu. Okay.
Has he answered yet?
No. I was not only aware but completely approved of the FBI interfering with a presidential election as long as it helps my side. So we're at that stage where, of course, we knew they were doing it. Next question. When did you decide that it was okay? Who gave them the authority? Where's the memo? Where's the legislation that you passed saying that this is okay? So you don't get to do it back door.
Wow.
So obviously this is a topic, again, that I'm passionate about. It's getting good. It's getting hot, and I'm excited. I don't know if anything's going to happen because of it, but I think so.
Yeah. And remember, Ted Lieu is the asshat that is pushing, is basically made it so that children are required to have 92 vaccinations in California by the time they're 18 years old in order to attend public education. He's been on my radar for a long time. Adam Schiff, same. I mean, he's not in on the vaccine stuff, but we all know the dirty shenanigans that Adam Schiff has been pulling. So
yeah, so he's also jumping on Elon Musk, or as you know, to the best of its pinheaded ability, watermelon head. So they're pissed. At least they're talking about it because it was dead silence on these revelations. You know, up until here recently, they were acting like it wasn't happening. So at least we're getting a response, and they're panicking. So we'll see what's going to happen. I keep hearing that next up is Dr. Fauci.
Okay.
So we'll see. Stay tuned. Questions about the information, comments about the information? Because if not, I'm going to go put my chickens in their coop. And Grandma's tired today.
No.
It's been a big week for me.
Okay, any questions, guys?
No, it's all pretty straightforward and informative.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy providing the information. Anything from you, Elizabeth?
Well, I can't help thinking that Edward Snowden and Julian Assange are completely vindicated. This has been, I want to say prophesied. They warned us about this years ago. The Operation Promise that is the government's backdoor software program that has been installed as surveillance for everyone is coming to light. This is not a new thing. This is just they just somehow have gotten busted and it's become public knowledge.
Thank goodness. And yes, they did warn us. They did tell us this stuff. You're absolutely correct. Edward Snowden has actually commented on the Twitter file stuff that's coming out. He applied for his Russian citizenship, or not citizenship,
right.
But
a
visa.
Yep.
He got a visa, and he's going to stay. And they granted him that. And so so he's commented a couple times about the stuff that's coming out. So we'll
Amazing.
See more to come. I consider this all good news. You know, it's a little detailed, but it's good information because I believe that, you know, we're at the precipice a big change is coming. I think that we're finally going to get to reclaim some of this territory. We'll see. But I think there's just too much, you know, with COVID, I think they pushed too hard, too fast because they had to get rid of Donald Trump. Elon Musk said Fauci killed millions of people. He went on Twitter and said that he's responsible for the death of millions of people.
Wow.
You don't just say that lightly. Okay.
Right, especially in the position he's in.
Yes.
Well, we all know
so
that.
Just as an update, he put out a tweet just a little while ago that said, should I step down as CEO of Twitter? Yes or no? I will abide by this poll.
I think that's absolutely.
So actually, if you have a Twitter account, I'd like you to go on there and vote no.
Kabuki Theater.
You're absolutely
I've lost all respect for him. I swear to God when I saw that. And here's the real things that are going on here. You know, they got rid of, and you know what's going on now? There are U.S. battleships that are in the fjord of Norway, which is right off of the Black Sea, which is the only transportation routes for Russia right now. My cousin lives there. He just came back. You see some pictures? And I was like, it doesn't surprise me. We are so close to poking the bear to where the bear is going to be like, I'm quite sure that what would be the best place to send a nuke? The middle of the country. Why not? Why not hit Chicago? But we're so close to nuclear war right now. Nobody's in charge in here.
So
here's another distraction from reality.
COVID.
Is Twitter.
Yeah.
This is crazy. We're in clown world.
If they would
clown
kill
world,
millions of people with COVID, then yes, they would start World War III. They would.
Yeah.
And they won't even tell us about it. It's happening, and we're talking about a fucking transgender basketball player. We're talking about Twitter censorship, and it's like, oh, my God, I can't stand it. But that's where I am on that. But
so here's the thing.
That's just me.
We're fighting back the only way we know how, which is transparency, the truth, okay? So, we don't have nuclear missiles, so we have the truth. That's all we got.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want you guys to have a wonderful week. I'm going to herd my chickens. Yeah. It sure was nice to get a shower today. You don't know how grateful you are for hot water. So I'm praying for all the people in the world that don't have hot water. And I'm extremely grateful for mine today. God is still sitting on his throne. He hasn't surrendered his authority. You guys have a great week, okay? Yes.
Yeah, the not having a shower, truck stops generally have very clean showers. They wash them, clean them out every time someone uses one. Like they charge you, your hot water was out, yeah. Yeah, I use them all the time. I have no problem with them.
I might have gotten that desperate. No knock on trucker showers. But if it had been that bad, I was going to get in the car and head down to my daughter's house and take a shower at her house. So.
Well, that's probably better. But.
Yeah. Have a great week, okay?
All right. Love you. Honey.
Thanks.
Love you. Bye.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, those truck stops are – some of them are like Las Vegas. I'm really amazed at what they have going on in those places. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I found that in some cases, sometimes, because they clean them every time someone uses one, it might even be cleaner than my shower at home to some, in some cases.
Amen to that. I know. Funny what we become accustomed to. The memories in my Facebook pop up, and I'm like, oh, my God, who lived in my house back then? It was so damn clean. I could see the counter. I could see the tables. And I look around. I'm like, we can motivate. We can fix this. But it's nice to see that at one time the house was clean 5 years ago. Oh, my God. That's funny.
Yeah, I got to take pictures every time we clean the house. It's a good idea so I can look back on it.
For some reason, I did, apparently. Apparently, maybe I had just cleaned it off, and I was like, hey, let's take a picture of what I did. We don't do that often, which is sad.
I have to step away for 1 second, so continue.
Oh, no worries. Yeah. How long has it been that you have been traveling like a gypsy in your truck?
It was – actually, I remember very well because it was 2016 – and Trump had just gotten elected while I was getting my CDL. Then I was over the road, meaning I went all over the country for a couple of years. And then I switched over to a local account where I was home every day. But I was home every day for like a couple hours. So, that's about it. And then, the company I worked for had lost that account. This was, I don't remember the year, maybe 2020. I think it was it was 2020 in October. They lost the account, and they didn't have another local route for me, and so I ended up on unemployment for a time. And then I got into a new account with a new company. And there's a lot of trouble with my latest ex-wife, but as far as the scheduling and whatnot, she always wanted me to like call in and come home and help her with her kids. And it's like, yeah, I'm trying to make money here, and pay the bills. But now I head out Friday night and I'm out till Wednesday morning, and I do pretty well doing that, make pretty good money. So it's pretty good.
That's good.
So, someday I might like to get a different job, but for now I kind of need the money and catching up on some debt that I got into. Well, that someone got me into, but I guess I won't go into too much detail on that. Just recovering from my last marriage, I guess. So once I can get some things paid down and maybe I don't need to make quite so much money, then probably be looking for, you know, something where I can be home more for my son.
Yeah, I'd fantasized about the life of a on the road, and I kind of
like
that the gypsy type. Yeah, a lot of people do, and you know I mean, the guy was. I get recruiters all the time that call me and. They're like, oh, God, yeah, bring your dogs, and they got vets. They, you know, the life on the road is pretty, they've accommodated for, you know, pets and whatnot. And and it's kind of alluring on some level, but then.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or even the RV, you know, to kick it all and get a big RV.
Yeah.
In
the, oh, yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, if I didn't have a son, I would be. Yeah. Yeah, if I didn't have a son, I wouldn't even be considering, you know, trying to find a, you know, being home more and all that. I'd probably sell my house and just, you know, be on the road, make money and spend a lot of time with, you know, because like I was saying before, with the internet and unlimited data and all that, there's a lot that you can do on the road nowadays. So you don't have to be isolated. So much, you know, before
well, you know
the advent
funny about
of
that
oh,
is that you are isolated. We live in these capsules, these cars, or you know, you and your truck. And as long as you've got like all your entertainment coming to you through a screen, you feel like you're connected to the world, and you're really not. It's kind of an illusion, which is I think is kind of funny that we really have. Lost sight of real true connections and like spending time with people in person. We only do it like around the holidays. You know, you got your little routine of, you know, like your work family and then your real family. And they talk about, you know, having your work husband, work wife, you have two different, you know, lives going on depending on what environment you're in. But you've become so, entertained with just having the entire world in the palm of your hand, so to speak. That it's kind of like taking you away from the actual world and relationships. And I find that a fascinating change to the culture.
Well, it is definitely better to be around people in person. You get the body language, the facial expressions, and all of that going. But I would also say that if you're in a situation like you're a trucker, and that's not really an option because of you're doing a job, then I think that having the communication with people over the internet, over the phone, is definitely a huge improvement over
if you could FaceTime.
You know, previous
time. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That itself, I think, is a great tool that we have that you can.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely wouldn't say that it's a replacement for in-person contact. I wouldn't say that at all. It just makes life easier when you're away.
Oh, it does. It does. I mean, I've had little kids get on the bus, and the dad will have the mom who's at work on the phone talking the kid off of the ledge, you know, because he's having a bad day, doesn't want to go to school. And I thought to myself, this is the coolest thing. You know, it takes the place of that, you know, you can't be there, but you can be there. And I'm like, this is probably the one plus that all this technology has. Because I'm a big, I'm not a big fan of it because I think it's crippled us on so many levels that we've lost so many skills.
Right, yeah, when people use it to replace, like, person in-person sort of contact, then, yeah, I agree with that.
Well, and I think the biggest thing that's replaced is actual the gaining of knowledge and experience. Like, the answer I would get to any question would be, well, you can Google it. It's like, you don't know. How come you don't know these things, the basic things? And we've just become so reliant on pushing a button and getting this answer that they don't store. You know, it's kind of like they don't even retain the knowledge they just Googled. That's where it's been, in my book, it's been a detriment.
Oh, yeah, why remember anything? Like phone numbers?
Yeah.
I don't remember phone numbers anymore. Like they're all saved.
No, we don't,
every,
we don't
you know?
Use them. We don't physically, we don't have to because we just go through and push. And you have no idea what you're pushing. It's just our phones have names. We don't even look at the
number.
I don't even know our own number, you know, and that's that's a sad thing. So that's kind of like weird. If you don't use your mind, like the reading, if you don't read. And here's like, you know, you generally, people used to love to read newspapers. The Sunday paper was fantastic. You'd get all these articles and videos, and then you do the crossword puzzle. Nobody does that anymore. They've reduced that to like these little Sudoku things, which perhaps are good for the brain, but there's nothing like actually reading words to strengthen your mind. And I think that's where we've become more of a visual.
Yeah.
Almost like a dog.
Well, time is a big factor there too. Yeah, I've listened to I don't know how many audiobooks. I have not had time to read a book since I don't know when.
Well, see,
you know,
you're driving. That's a whole different – you've got a whole different scenario. You actually have to be focused upon the road as opposed to, you know, people do make time for things that are important. Our priorities are different. And,
although
you
are unvaccinated, so, you know, I mean, you can just take those risks and just read while you drive, you know. That's what we do, right?
Yeah, there you go. I guess that's what I do.
Well, here's an interesting tidbit about people who drive, though, for a living. Because I went and did a college evaluation as to what I'm going to do with my life and what would be good. And they nailed me down to perhaps a truck driver would be best suited for you because of the fact that I'd not be happy in a environment that wasn't active. Because that my mind operates on such a level that it actually equated – you know, people that don't have a lot of intelligence, they're happy being bored in a little office or industry or whatever. But people that are highly intelligent and their minds are constantly moving, they make the most adept drivers. It's good. That's the job that's good for them. And I've been doing this for like 20 years. And I never would have, like, I was like, drive a truck? What do you mean drive? I mean, but it is actually, you're always, when you're driving, and you'll attest to this, there's so much going on. It's like you're just constantly aware. It's movement, and it stimulates the brain. And if you have a high intelligence, you need that stimulation. So that's it's a unique job.
My guess that I should be a farmer.
A farmer?
A farmer.
I'm teasing.
I tend to be very introverted too, so I like having all that time to myself. And then, but then when I go, when I'm off, I always go out and do something. You know, I go out at nighttime when I'm off. I spend the days with my son, and nights I go out and spend time with some friends or something, and do that. But it's kind of nice because I get all week I'm by myself, and I like that kind of the solitude and whatnot. And and then I've got a couple days of activity, and that's good. And then and I like that, so it works well for me.
Well, you're one of the few that are blessed with liking the job. There's not many do. And it's so funny that we've become accustomed to not working, that it's hard to get people to actually go out and work anymore, even in the little jobs that are out there. And when I look at my place, my environment, there are the big industries are the hospitals, the school district. I think you've got in, like, you know, the city, streets and sanitation and stuff. And then you've got retail. And then your little bitty, I don't even equate them as restaurants, but the food places. And other than that, in a factory, the job market's pretty non-existent. Outside of this hidden ocean of this, you know, working from home kind of thing, which I'm kind of interested in with the wealth of that kind of.
I actually worked from home before I was a trucker. I worked for Comcast wireless support. And,
oh, did you really?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I was wireless support for Comcast. They only paid $11 an hour. I was there for 3.5 years, and like,
I know.
I wanted to make $11 an hour my whole life, so.
I know. It's so much.
I was pretty good at it, too.
It's interesting because my son just started his first job at Chuck E. Cheese, and he makes $15 an hour. And
I know.
Starting January 1st, it's going up to $16.25.
Yeah.
Well,
this was back in 2016 that I left that job. So wages have gone up a lot since then, since COVID, really.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And inflation
and
has gone up a lot, too. So.
Oh, it's good, Lord. Even like $25 an hour is almost poverty level now, which is pretty sad. It used to be a pretty good wage.
Especially in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I live in sort of a rural area. Like my house, I think I bought it in 2013, I want to say, or something like that. And it was $30,000. So, like, to give you an idea of the cost of living where I live, it's pretty low. It's out in the Saginaw area in Michigan. And, pretty not far from Flint. If you might remember the water crisis, that was like a half hour from where I live. But I have a well, so I wasn't too worried. But you know, they live out in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
should have a well. I really do think it's the way to go.
Yeah.
If
you can. I think in concentrated city areas, it's not really feasible because I don't know if the water table can handle that much.
In my area, we have built upon the water table. We built upon the fen. Every time they do any kind of construction, they tap into the water table and they have a huge leak. And I'm like, where's the Army Corps of Engineers should be here saying, you can't build here because you're going, this will happen. And I'm like, they shouldn't have built anything in this area because we are right on the water table. And it's a lot. So I would think that all of us, if we dig far enough in our backyards, could hit a well and be done with it. We simply don't know this. ambition to do that, let alone do a garden or anything like that.
Right.
Well, that's what I like about rural living. I also have solar panels. I think that home solar is a really good idea. I don't know that like a city could run solar necessarily, but I think home solar is a great idea because especially with energy prices going up, I had a loan for the solar panels, but like that's not going up. That's the same price because it's a loan. So.
I see they catching on a lot around here, but my wonderment is, how does it fare through the snow?
Yeah, it does not generate as much power during the winter.
Because they're all on everybody's roof. So I'm just curious
They stay warm enough that the snow melts, so it doesn't really – the snow isn't so much of a problem. But the issue where I'm at, as you get north, during the winter, the sun is not as direct because of the tilt of the Earth's axis and the way it hits the Earth in the winter. So you don't get as direct sunlight during the winter. So it does generate less power there. But it's still overall a good investment long term.
I wonder.
We've got so much sun, you know. My mom actually has solar panels at the farm, and most months SDG&E, the gas company, pays her. So,
yeah.
But we live in San Diego. Sunshine. You know, we've got sunshine most days. So.
Right. Yeah, you've got a lot more sunshine there.
Just because it's a new program, they're paying people to do this in order to get it to catch on?
Well, what they do is they buy it. They buy the energy from the solar panels. So to sell it to other users. Yeah. And so, you know, at the end of the year, she may have like a $13 power bill. She pays yearly instead of monthly because of that arrangement.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can save a lot of money with it. And especially as the energy prices start going up from, well, shortages for one. I mean, people are buying a lot more electric cars, and the inflation also is going to spike up the prices of energy. So it just gets a better and better deal as time goes on. I think it's a really good investment. Even for me in Michigan, which is not the best place to have solar, but mm-hmm. it's still a net positive. So, but I still have an energy bill, though, because I also get my natural gas from the same company.
Mm-hmm.
So,
uh-huh.
so I still have a bill for that for heating and whatnot. But
we just turned on our heater for the first time in the year, and our pilot light was actually out, so we had to have a maintenance guy come in and turn it on. And you know, I was like, okay, thank you. Well, my husband could have too, but there was something wrong with it. They had to put in another part. Yeah, but I'm like, okay, thanks. You know, I'll probably use this for a couple days and then not use it for the rest of the year.
Right. Yeah, you Southern California people. But I don't feel too bad because, like, I think you make up for the lower heating costs and paying more for pretty much everything else.
Oh, yeah.
There.
I'm not saying that we got the good end of the deal here as far as cost of living. Not at all. And
yeah.
Our rents are just ridiculous. Like, there was, I saw a place on a house, a 3-bedroom house in our neighborhood for rent on Facebook for $8,000 a month.
Oh my gosh.
When I wrote something on there, I was like, wow, it's pretty, but $8,000? And somebody's like, well, you don't really need to say anything. And I'm like, well, I'm just a little bit shocked that and sad that, you know, most people are being priced out of our neighborhoods, right? It's like we got in, we're in a 3-bedroom now, and we got in basically right before it started to go, you know, to skyrocket. And we're at about $3,000 a month. I just saw a place right across the street that was a 2-bedroom, one bath for $3,500 a month, and we're in a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, or 1.5-bath, but it's just insane. And usually some times of the year it's better, like nobody wants to move around Christmas time, so the rents are a little bit lower. Not since COVID has just been every single month it's going up, and even with
it's so weird.
There's a cap, right, so that like our, you know, we sign a year lease. You know, they when our lease is up, they can't raise it $8,000, but they can. It's still going to go up
right.
with the $300 a month for the year.
A year, yeah, it's insane. They've used that excuse to price gouge everything. It's horrible out here. I think it's like $1,400 for a 2-bedroom.
Yeah. Oh wow,
which was like insane.
Yeah.
You know, I pay $850 for 2-bedroom.
Yeah,
that's how much it's gone up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, and it's really weird for California because so many people are fleeing California, yet somehow the real estate and the housing still keeps going up. It's really bizarre to me.
Thanks, Blackwater.
Blackwater. That's the mercenary.
Yeah.
not those guys. Mercenaries running around jacking up prices.
Basically.
Yeah,
and then eggs.
Yeah,
even things like eggs are just ridiculous, right? Like, I'm so glad we have chickens because, like, I think it was like $7.99 for a dozen last time I looked. Like, just.
Oh, wow. That is nice.
Yeah.
They jacked ours up. I'm paying almost $6 for a carton of eggs right now.
Man, I haven't been to the grocery store lately, but I'm going to check that out when I get home because usually it's like a couple bucks, like a dollar or something, I think.
Yeah.
It's a long time ago. It's been about $2 or $3 for a while, but they've gone up.
tremendously. And on the, yeah. the flip side, yeah, my gas went down. My gas went down to $3.30 and $3.09. I was like, wow, this is fantastic. Because we're like the highest. Well, not.
You're pretty high.
Danielle has me on that, but something's
yeah,
going on for the better.
It's come down
high,
a little
though.
Bit. It's come down a little
I mean,
bit.
I mean, we're so close to having Hoovervilles everywhere. With who can afford that kind of money? Everyone's going to be living in their cars if they can afford a car.
Truckers,
we're really
yeah.
in a terrible state right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
So, like I said, we pay you know just over $3,000 a month. It's going to go up to $3,300, and we play a game when we walk our dogs in the morning. Is this human shit or dog shit on the sidewalk?
Right, I heard about that. I heard it was really bad in San Francisco, but it's getting pretty bad in the San Diego area too now.
Yeah, and I know you live here, so you'll be familiar with the area. Right now, we're in Point Loma. And, you know, which
okay.
is actually like a nice neighborhood. And, you know, we have to lock our car doors because people will break into them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt like, we were kind of joking around, looked like a biker gang, like bicycle gang of these like homeless people in front of the grocery store this morning. And it was like this like rough looking dude with like a bright purple bike. And I'm like, that's not yours. We see people walking around with bolt cutters hanging out of the back out of their backpacks and looking into car windows, and nobody says anything or does anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, the police
yeah.
don't do anything, right, anymore.
No.
Because they're setting the catalytic converters off cars left and right around here.
Yeah, they just passed laws about that here, too.
Now, how far are you from San Bernardino? I heard that they were so close to annexing and starting their own state, but they just missed
That's
it.
Amazing. Probably about an hour away from San Bernardino.
That's up the I-15, right?
Yep, that's up the 15.
Yeah.
I would never live there.
Oh.
Why is that?
I've been through there, but I don't really know much about it.
It's just it's too far inland for me. I know that sounds spoiled,
oh, yeah.
but... It, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, not only that, but it's temperature. I can't handle weather. I just, you know, when it gets too hot, I just can't do it. You know, I don't know. Maybe one of these days I'll have to, but I'll be sad.
Yeah, and Temecula's up there too, I think, right?
Temecula, yeah, and they get so hot in the summertime.
Yeah, I've been out there a few times.
You know,
yeah.
we're going
well,
on our ninth day of no sun in Chicago.
Yeah.
9 days
yeah.
without sun because we've had a blanket.
Yeah, I've been out here, too. I was just driving up
yeah.
through the I-94, I-294 last night.
And
so.
The sun came out today, and it was glorious. And it's just, what are you
yeah.
people? What are you doing to us? It's horrible.
Yeah, it's been in the 40s in the morning here. I've been having to walk this four-pack of dogs every morning at like 7:30. It was
mm-hmm.
44 degrees, and I was like, what is this? This is nasty. You know, your nose gets cold, and I don't know. I just don't want to live. I've said this before, but, I don't want to live anywhere. I don't know why anybody would, where when you walk outside, your face hurts. Like, why would anybody want to live in a place that hurts their face, hot or cold?
Oh, well, I don't know. You get used to it, I guess.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what my husband said.
Winter,
he's from Chicago.
Yeah, you just kind of get used to it. But I've lived in Michigan most of my life, aside from my time in the Marine Corps. And I lived in Washington State. I don't know. Did you know? You knew about that, right, Danielle? I actually moved in with Josh and Michelle.
No, I didn't know that.
Then,
so you were in Bellingham?
Oh, yeah, I was in Bellingham in 2007, so a year after I got out of the Marine Corps.
Oh, my gosh, I was there in 2007 staying with Josh and Michelle just on vacation with Aiden when he was March of 2007.
I must have gotten there, like, right after you then, because it was...
Was Was Heather up there then?
Thank you very much. No, it was just me, and they had that apartment that was like the sort of half underground.
The basement, yeah, that's where I stayed.
Yeah, the basement. Yeah, no, I stayed with them for a couple of weeks until I found a job and a place of my own, and I lived in Bellingham for about a year, actually.
Bellingham is neat. It's probably my third favorite city. You know, just in summertime, it's like summer camp.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of buskers and coffee shops. I used to hang out at a coffee shop that was kind of a Christian city mission sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And had a lot of fun there. I actually had a gig. I played piano there on Thursday nights. But, yeah, it was a pretty good time. I liked Bellingham pretty well.
Yeah, it's nice vibe.
It didn't get
it's
too cold.
It doesn't get too cold. It's like... you know, it snows a little bit, right? I don't know. I might be able to handle that, but but being buried in snow.
Yeah, you don't want Michigan.
When your eyes freeze
you
over.
You don't want Chicago or Michigan. Yeah, I know
no.
that
happens. Well, that's kind of a funny story. So my husband was living in Chicago, grew up in Chicago, and came out here. His sister moved out here, and he came to visit her. And it was... like in the 70s, you know, and because it was winter, but he went home and he said he drove to this, to a lake, and it was probably about a quarter of a mile, you know, little hike that he had to go to get to this lake. And, he said he got about halfway there. And he said that he felt like his lungs were freezing, you know? And so he's like, he's having a hard time breathing. And he's like, you know what? I need to turn around because, you know, if I don't get back to my car, I might freeze to death, right? And so he barely made it to the car, and he looked at the weather in Chicago and looked at the weather in San Diego, and it was a 100-degree difference. And that right there in that car, when he decided that he was going to move, he's like, why am I here? What am I doing here? It's 100 degrees difference.
Well,
what, you know, look at the birds of paradise.
Yeah, you pay the price, though.
Yeah.
You pay the price.
True.
I don't like snow and everything. I'm not really into it, but I don't know. Like, I guess my family is there, and I have a son now. So, I mean, if I were to move, I'd have to find some way to drag my ex along to bring my son and everything. It would be quite a logistical nightmare, to be honest. So.
Right. I'm just a weather snob. I'm not really, you know, saying that anybody should move. I'm a weather snob.
Yeah, I have a hard time recommending someone move to California at this point, to be honest.
I don't blame you for that.
I've got a buddy that he runs a U-Haul. Well, he does a couple of things, but one of the things he does is he runs a U-Haul location, right? And he was telling me about the U-Haul business in California and how it was so hard to get one leaving California because so many people are moving away.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd almost get paid to take one out there. So it was quite a, there's quite a lot of movement out of there. So, but I think it has a lot to do with what you're saying with like the homelessness and the human feces on the ground
I think
it seems like
to do with politics.
And
you know,
right.
It's funny that the weather has changed so much, and you know, knowing that it's the government has the ability to manipulate the weather in such a fashion. I remember years back that it was like every year I wanted to drive out west, everything was on fire, and I noticed a pattern every year. There'd be these fires. And I was like, good Lord, what is going on? And now it's like we don't even think about it anymore. You know, it's like there is no spring, summer, winter, fall. There's incredible disasters that happen each season in different parts.
We have summer, fire, earthquake, and I don't know summer again.
and here, like,
yeah, I remember some of the fires.
It's unreal. And here it's been like, I'll look every day at my car at the temperature and I'll walk out thinking it's freezing, but it's not. And I'm like, okay, this is good. It's kind of balmy.
and it's 34 degrees. And it's been 34 degrees every day for a week, and we have no sun, and everybody is getting sick, you're feeling yucky, and it's not quite there to freeze. And then it dropped 3 degrees, and we got our little snow event, and then it went right back up to that climate where all the viruses can grow at 34. But in the meantime, when you walk out, it's like, no, it feels like it's 40 or 50. It's kind of like they're almost gaslighting you with reality, because it's like, what? Well, and it's the middle or the end of December. And I'm like, what are you doing to us with this fuckery? Because it's not a natural jet stream. There's not a natural anything. It's just like, for it to stay the same time, it's mad scientist land, in my opinion.
Well, I find that for me, what happens is that as the winter gets on, like 30s, gets down to the 30s, and I feel really cold. And then at some point, you know, it drops way down, like below zero, freezing. And then it goes back up to maybe 20s, 30s. And then I feel like it doesn't feel that cold. And I think it's because I got used to the really low temps, you know, the zero temperatures. Mm-hmm. And then when it goes up to like the 30s, now that feels kind of comfortable because it's coming back from something that's like deep freeze, especially that cold wind that comes in sometimes. It's awful. But then it feels kind of nice at 30 or something. And you're like, oh God, it's 30. It's so nice. But the temperature has been changing in the world for millions of years, like since the world came about. That's not really kind of anything new. There have been times where the world has been a snowball and times where it's been tropical pretty much everywhere.
But so now we have two different CERNs that have turned on. We have these mechanisms that are going that are altering things. And we've got HARP and CERN, and you know, I got wind farms. You know, they can make it we have inland hurricanes because they can orchestrate this shit, and it's like, this is just not natural. And you know, way back when, and you only know what they've told you. You know that there was an ice age. You know that there was a dark age. We don't know. We just know what we've been told. But what's going on now is orchestrated with incredible technology.
And just wait till the next dark age is coming.
We're in the dark ages.
Time with nukes.
Yes, we are. We are. North Korea style dark age, censorship and gaslighting, nonstop.
I think we're on the way, but I think that's going to get quite a bit worse than where we're at, to be honest.
What I'm saying is that we had technology, in ancient times, that was way better than what we have here. You know, that's why they call the pyramids it's the great mysteries, right? Great wonders of the world, is because the people still to this day, you know, don't know with the tools that they supposedly had back then, how they were able to build it with such precision. So,
the monolith, the great cuts, the precision, the laser cuts.
A laser cut.
300-ton rocks. We can't do that with the technology we have today. We can't recreate these old temples that are here, there, and everywhere. We couldn't recreate them. And we just kind of like leave them as these tourist places that we go, and these old pyramids and whatnot. But the technology that was incredible. Before you talk to someone who was a rock cutter. Yeah.
And then you've got the Bible, right? That, you know, the Tower of Babel, right? Like, come on. If that wasn't the internet, then I don't know what was. And then the monolith or the obelisks that are all over the world. And, you know, the fact that we've got all this information that's hidden from us, like for the longest time. And even to this day, I don't really think that the archaeologists are even admitting this, but You know, for the longest time, we were saying that the pyramids were built like 4,000 years ago, and now there's evidence that they were around way longer than that. And like things like Göbekli Tepe, which was a
14,000 years.
Yeah, 14,000 years ago.
It's supposed to have been 5,000. Yeah, so the actual facts contradict their scientific facts. So, and for them to just be like, if we're silent, it'll just go away. This is our story. We're sticking to it. Pay no attention to Göbekli Tepe. And interestingly enough, they got a war going on over there, so they covered it all up. And pretty soon they're going to bury it, protect it, and pretty soon it'll be gone. So pay no attention to that. Stick to our story.
As Graham Hancock says, I think we are a species with amnesia, and that our potential is so much more than it is now. And that's why I think we live in the dark ages, because of all of this evidence.
Well, there's a lot of evidence now that about 10 to 11,000 years ago, I think, there was the ice age, that the glaciers of the time melted very quickly, very rapidly, within maybe a year or a couple of years, due to maybe a meteor strike or something to that effect. And,
Unger Dryas.
Younger Dryas, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that happened very rapidly, which certainly would have the potential to wipe out a civilization, but I think. For one, you've got all of the glaciers melting. Sea levels rose, I think, about 400 feet, something to that effect. And not only that, but the glaciers were putting so much pressure on the land in Europe, in North America, that the whole landscape changed, because without that pressure on top of the land of these glaciers, that's millions of tons of weight that just goes away. The land rises up, and then land elsewhere goes down, kind of like a waterbed. I think I brought that up last week, but I don't remember. But so the whole landscape, changed with that. And there's a lot of evidence to support that nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
And that certainly could end a civilization.
Mm-hmm. Actual fossils just blow away all their theories. The cornfields in Illinois, where I grew up, they started bulldozing and building things. I still have this fossil that came out of a cornfield, and it is an old seashell. So Illinois was the bottom of the ocean at one time, and it also was under the glaciers, so from what they say, but the actual evidence shows that this was an ocean, because there's seashells.
And people just want to ignore that,
right? Crickets.
There's actually something that I've been looking into. So Atlantis, right? It could just be a myth story, whatever. But there's evidence that it could have been. Have you heard of the Eye of the Sahara?
I have. Yeah. I have something else to say about it, but I'm gonna hold off while you're going over.
It's basically in Mauritania, Africa. It's called the Reshot structure, and it's actually something that astronauts use to identify where they are up in space. They know, that's because it's such a big landmass, you can see it from space, and you can totally see, lots of evidence that there was a huge deluge of water coming through there at one point, and they kind of pin it on the Unger Dryas period, so how big the circles are, and how there's mountains, the Atlas Mountains to the north, which is I think who they say lived in at first in Atlantis was King Atlas, and just all of these things, the fact that it looks like there's evidence that there was a harbor there at one point, that it was a trade center. you know, and that all kind of, you know, goes back to the idea that we do live in the dark ages, and that that our civilization, there are civilizations out there that have been here for much, much longer, older, more technology, that, you know, like I said, I think we live in the dark ages, and I really wish they would stop hiding this stuff, but it's part of keeping us enslaved. So, but what were you going to say, John?
Yeah, if you read the plates, I mean, because really I think the main reference we have to the existence of Atlantis is Plato's account.
Yeah.
And if you read his account, it talks about beyond the pillars of Heracles, which is Gibraltar, the Straits of Gibraltar, is what he's talking about there. Beyond the Straits of Gibraltar, there's an island chain there, and I'm trying to remember, you know, precisely enough. It was something to the effect that there was an ocean for which the Mediterranean Sea is but a lake, right? So referring to the Atlantic Ocean. And so there's an island chain there, and he was talking about it was between the two continents. He was referring to, it was very obvious, he was referring to the Americas, right? So the continent on the other side is America and Europe, and in between there was Atlantis. And the reference was that there were the Atlantis people, I think, were invading Europe or something to that effect. And I'd have to look it up again to get the exact quote. But the placement, if you read Plato's account, is very it seems pretty obvious to me that it had to be in the Atlantic Ocean, near maybe where the Azores are or something to that effect. And that's why it's important with the glaciers putting the pressure on the American continent and the European continent. Can push up, it pushes down those continents, then pushes up the bottom of the Atlantic. And then if you look at the mapping of the Atlantic Ocean near the middle, I think it's the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, you can kind of see that it matches up pretty well with what he was saying. So, I mean, I think the strongest theory for it is that when the glaciers melted, the pressure was released from the surrounding land. So it's kind of like a waterbed. If you push on with both your hands, like between your hands, the middle goes up. If you release that pressure, the middle goes back down. And so I think the strongest theory about it is that with the melting of the glaciers so rapidly, the land that was the island chain of Atlantis sunk back down for that reason. That's kind of what I think about it at this point.
Well, what do you
think?
Was there any evidence of elephants on the island? Because that's, you know, like that's one of the big things too, is they were elephants. I don't know.
Well, most of it is well below the ocean, so I don't know that you can really find elephant fossils below the ocean.
But there's whale bones in Mauritania.
Oh, no. And what's Mauritania? Is that where the Eye of Africa is?
Yeah, our Eye of the Sahara. Yeah, it's in Mauritania.
Eye of Sahara, yeah.
Yep. And so I don't know. We may never know, and it's certainly not worth arguing over, right? Because it's just a theory at this point. But, you know.
Yeah. We're just putting out different theories.
Yeah. We do know that something big happened there.
But on a regular basis, though, there's so many. I watched a video of a lost civilization way up in Siberia, of all places, and that was unbelievable. But there's so many areas of the earth that you have sunken civilizations like that you know, with the story of Pompeii, with the underground volcanoes and such things, but all over the earth are these monstrous, huge, incredible civilizations that have temples and statues under the water that, you know, we just don't even want to talk about. So that, you know, Atlantis could have been just one of many. Tartaria comes to mind when I saw this video in Siberia, and it's like, holy cow. And, you know, you never hear anything about Siberia or Russia or that area, but it was a
fact that there's massive evidence that Egypt, like the pyramids and the Sphinx were underwater, you know, after they were built.
Yes.
So I don't know. There's just so much, misinformation or information that's being kept from us that it's just so nearly impossible to tell who's telling the truth or what is real.
And then when you read the creation story in the Bible, in the beginning it said that in the beginning the earth was made void without form. I wonder if that's like a reference to some civilization ending event.
Could be.
Well, I think the most fascinating thing of that is the asteroid belts, the missing planets, the huge rift on Mars, and all the ancient megaliths that they're finding on Mars. That, you know, there was more going on out in this little universe than just this Earth, and they don't want to talk about that.
Right.
Well, I seen a support you on Mars, so you can colonize Mars.
We talked about the Titans or the Greek mythology, which, you know, old myths, you know, those are old accounts of history, and even further back, you know, the hiding of history is unbelievable. And, you know, now we've got the micromanagement of the hiding of actual reality and facts and opinions and misinformation, and it's like, it's almost ridiculous when you really think about it. The tight grip of the thought police that we have everywhere on every level. Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
Well,
so, John, let me ask you a question.
Sure, go ahead.
So we had a guest on a while back talking about, we were talking about Adam and Eve. And she had a theory that, you know, this original sin that Eve, quote unquote sin, that Eve, you know, committed, was eating the apple, right? The forbidden apple or the forbidden fruit or whatever you want to think it is. And she has a theory that really what that is in regards to is basically she walked into a market and ate something that was supposed to be paid for, right? And, and that right there was the first, you know, evidence that she says of, of the sin that is owning the resource of food. Does that make sense?
Oh, if she was supposed to pay for it, then ownership already existed.
Well, right, exactly. And so that was her theory is that food was the first resource that was taken away from man, right? That was controlled by, you know, by a government. And so her walking in, you know, the sin, you know, and that's what got her kicked out of the garden that got, and obviously there were people around when they got kicked out. And we know that Adam and Eve were not the first people because they had two sons, Cain and Abel. And when they left the garden, Cain and Abel married women. So, you know, where did those women come from? But I just thought it was a really interesting take on it. That is it possible that food was the first resource that was taken away from us, taken ownership away from humans?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of an out there theory, but like, I don't know. I think it might have some merit, and I think it might be the first resource that needs to be taken back because it was the first one to be taken away.
Well, I don't know. I tend to think that because I listen to Jordan Peterson, I like his take on it, and I think I kind of think what he's getting at is that the original sin may have had something to do with the dawning of sapience. But that, I don't know, it doesn't make a lot of sense, I guess, with the time frame. So
Can you elaborate a little more on that?
Issues with that too. Right. Because he takes it back to before, because humanity used to live in trees, you know, before farming and all of that. And if you think of, like, the life of an animal, right, they just go around, they eat food, whatever. Like, there's no thought about it. I mean, not that animals don't think to some degree, but, like, animals don't really have sort of the sense of ownership. I mean, it can be territorial, I guess, but, like, you're just in this place where there's all this food, and you just grab it and eat it, and, like, you know, there's no trade or anything like that.
Yeah, and abundance.
But then when, with the dawn of intelligence and sapience, then, because then they knew they were naked, right? So that's kind of an indicator that they didn't know, they didn't understand the concept of nudity before the eating from the tree of life, or the, not the tree of life, eating from the tree of knowledge. The tree of knowledge, excuse me, right?
Which really
and,
the
and that the were. The original sin was knowledge of good and evil, which is sort of a something that's tied in with sapience, with being an intelligent being as opposed to, you know, an animal intelligence. That's how he kind of ties it in. And then and there's a lot of indicators that support that. But if you're going to go with the time frame of, I think it's like 6,000 years, if you follow the Begats in the Bible, something like that, that doesn't really fits so well, so I don't know. So there are some issues with it. But, what I think is that, so God created Adam and Eve. I mean, that's really pretty clear that Adam and Eve, even though there were other people around, Adam and Eve were created by God. So they were different in some way from the other people. So, and
well,
they all carried, you know, whatever they had, but
have the Holy Spirit put upon them.
Hold on a second. Maybe. I don't know. I think that's the first time I've heard that, so I tend to have to kind of think things through before I can really comment, I guess. So I
first
have the Holy Spirit put upon them.
That's what I think anyway, that they were the first ones to be made in the image of God. They were the first ones to, you know, to be given a job by God, you know, and here's another interesting thing was when Eve realized that she was naked, she covered herself up with fig leaves, right? Like that was the thing that they talk about is that she was aware of it and then she covered herself up. And the fact that, you know, that fig leaves would have been discarded, you know, in a market for, you know, a large quantity also kind of like, I guess, lends credibility to that theory, in my opinion. I'm not set on it, but it's definitely something to mull.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Well,
my mind goes back to the King's Tablets, the Sumerians, the Babylonians.
Oh, yeah.
Which goes back to the Anunnaki, which, you know, has the same story but blows away the whole religion aspect of it. But that's written in stone, and that's an ancient cuneiform that's not that many people like to reference anymore. But that's history written in stone. And, you know, it all depends on who you want to name as gods, you know, the Anunnaki fit right into the creator and created us for a purpose to mine the gold and different things. And we were made in their image and they were master scientists and stuff. And that goes into the Atlantis story where they had their own DNA changing technology and such things. And that's goes very, very far away from your religious teachings. So it's kind of, you know, the religious teachings are from a book and from people in a
kind of government-like structure. And then you get the King's tablets were written history. So it's kind of like, which way am I going? I tend to go towards archaeology and things that are written
well,
in stone.
Well, the King's tablets were something that a king did, then hey, wouldn't that also be a government?
Yeah.
It would just
but
be a different
was,
government source.
This was a history of different civilizations that go back to this. What was before the Sumerians? You had Babylon, you had Assyria, you had the Sumerians. And then the very top of this king's list of civilizations, it's been swiped over. So we don't even know. Like someone took like Bondo, and so the very beginning we have no knowledge of it. It's like, who did that?
Or maybe there was
who
a flood.
Did our history way back then, but we really
yeah.
don't know the history of ancient civilizations and the history of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating.
Well, there was definitely a flood. I mean, I think most people.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, and even like you look at the Samaritan texts, right, where we've got the Epic of Gilgamesh, which is basically the same thing as Noah's Ark. These are civilizations
mm-hmm.
who could not have been in contact, you know, but they both had the same story of a big-ass flood.
Right.
Yeah, I wonder.
Go,
I wonder.
You've got the war in heaven. The war in heaven. You know, you've got these planets that were blown up and, you know, ruined. You know, Mars is decimated that had life at one time. So you have evidence of a war in heaven, which is even before the flood. So it's just,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's amazing what nobody wants
what
to
do. What are you saying,
about.
John?
I wonder if the flood stories might correlate with the Younger Dryas, is what I was going to say. I don't really know. That would be interesting
to
look into. The rapid melting of the ice sheets.
Yes. This took probably about 40
and also,
days.
Also
what
in...
before the ice age? You know, you've got Antarctica that's under a sheet of ice, and under that you've got people talking
the
about...
Yeah.
The continent itself was a tropical paradise at one time, and then all of a sudden...
Right. Well, that would have been, I think, hundreds of thousands of years ago. But, yes, there definitely was a time when the Earth was, there were no ice caps. And that's what also when they talk about this global warming and how we have to prevent it and it's so bad. But, I mean, we're at the lower end of the temperature scale as far as if you look at the higher temperatures that the Earth has had and the lower temperatures. We're at the lower end of that. We're not anywhere near, like the higher end of that scale. So I'm just thinking, like, what's so bad if it gets warmer? Like, why is that such a bad thing?
Right.
And we've got all this land in Canada, in Siberia, all this land up there. And if it were warmer, like, wouldn't we have more arable land that's more habitable, that could be farmed and inhabited? It just doesn't really seem like... And that's another thing, too. If you ask a lot of these global warming, climate change alarmist people, like, what is the bad thing that's going to happen from global warming? They can't really give you an answer. They can. They'll say, oh, it's just climate change is bad. They'll point at, like, hurricanes and stuff like that,
yeah,
but that's just normal stuff that's been happening forever.
It's just a new form of control they're using. It's a cult.
It is, for sure. I don't even like to call it climate change anymore because there is a problem out there, but it's not climate change. I think I call it climate contamination, right? Because you've got, pig farmers making red tides, you know, the size of Texas off the coast of Florida and, you know, all kinds of nasty stuff. Chemtrails we've got going on in the air, you know, spraying metal all over us. Those are the big problems, and nobody will ever talk about those things.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the overall, and the other thing is that the climate is going to change on the Earth. Like, it has been doing that for millions of years.
Always has, always will.
It's going to keep doing it.
Right, and the hubris of people thinking that they can actually change that is astounding. Sorry, go on.
So, really what we should be looking into is how are we going to adapt to climate change, not the stupid idea that we can prevent it. And for one, you know, it's a lot less, I would venture to guess that adapting to climate change is going to be a heck of a lot less cheaper than trying to change it, you know, with all the regulations. And most of the solutions they come up with involve completely and utterly destroying the markets and the economy and government overreach and outright socialism a lot of the time, essentially. And they just want to destroy destroy what we've built. And it's just, and when that's your only solution to a problem, like, I'm very suspicious of that. It's like, okay, we got this problem. The only way we can solve it is for you to give us all this power and take over, you know, all of the commerce and the economy and business. And it's just like, yeah, I'm a little skeptical about that, man. It's like, come on.
Like, I mean, I don't see anything wrong with moderation, right? Like we've had electric vehicles for way longer than people want to admit, but industries do have a tendency of squashing the competition. But, you know, if we, like, what if we, you know, reduced our oil, you know, the amount of oil we use, you know, through things like electric cars and things like that. Hell, we've got cars that run on pee, you know, oil.
There's some issues with electric cars, though. I have some personal issues with it. I have a 70-mile commute. You know, when I go, I mean, I'm at work all week, so but it's a 70-mile drive for me from where I live to where I work. So in the winter, right, I need heat. So when you're driving an electric car, you're using an electric heater. How much of my drive time am I going to lose using electric heat while I'm driving? Am I going to be able to drive to work and back?
I feel that, but I think that the electric cars that we have, you know, access to are not, they're still like dumbed down compared to what we, you know, could have. You know, like I said, we can use our cars in vegetable oil if we, you know, or pee or lots of things. You know, we don't doesn't even necessarily have to be electric, but, the, you know, I think that we should be embracing alternative energy sources to heat our homes, to drive. But I also know that we can't make, you know, many things without oil, right? There's it's not just, you know, transportation and heating. There's a lot of things that we use oil for that can't really, there's not really a good alternative to, you know.
Natural gas is a good alternative for heating.
What's that?
Well, the thing is
natural gas. For heating, natural gas is, that's what I have. In fact, I don't think many people use oil for heating. It's natural gas. Well, I guess there's propane is kind of, might be, you know, I'm not for sure, but propane might be like a gas product.
It's basically diesel, isn't it?
I'm not sure. I should. My grandfather actually owned a propane business, but I was very, very young when that was going on, so I didn't really learn the ins and outs of it.
Yeah.
But then the other issue with the electric is you have to generate the power, and where is the power coming from? A coal power plant? Because is that really better to have more coal power plants to generate electricity than it is to burn gas in a car?
No, but I think we should start embracing things like nuclear power.
Oh, sure.
I
agree. Nuclear power is definitely the way, but it's not happening. And the same people that are pushing all the environmental, you know, electric cars and everything are also opposed to nuclear power for some reason.
That's true.
It's like they don't want a solution.
I firmly believe that we have access to unlimited renewable energy sources, and I don't think the government's letting it. And that goes back to the whole pyramid, you know, like how did that happen? What kind of technology did they have? I believe the same technology gives us unlimited energy sources.
Tesla's theory of the earth has energy. You know, it's funny, you get to watch out
who's in control of the new next thing? And the new next thing is this heat fusion. Did you hear about that story that we've just tapped into nuclear fusion? And it's like that. All of a sudden, all of these power barons of the oil industry are going to relinquish their power and kill the fossil fuel industry and adopt this new technology, because now they can have complete control over all of our energy via this new clean thing that they have. But
it's not new.
No, it's not new, but it just came out like last week. We just discovered it, and
quote-unquote, discovered it.
Yeah, and everybody can have it, but we're going to be in control of it. And we need to fight to keep every avenue open. Like right now, they are going balls to the walls, trying to buy up every old car there is and crush it. They're not even exporting them to other countries anymore.
Exactly.
And now you only have one type of car, and it's going to be your smart car that they can turn on and turn off with a social credit system. And that's what we really have to watch out
for. You say something wrong on Twitter, and your car will turn on for 72 hours.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the dystopian nightmare. Yes.
Right.
And,
but I really do think that that's a directed energy weapon that they're finally coming. They've known about this since the 70s.
Yeah, oh,
if you look at Dr. Judy Wood, I think we've talked about this before, but I really do think that, like, you know, that 9/11, those towers coming down was a weapons demonstration. And it was a directed energy. The cold fusion that just now, this newfangled thing, we saw the demonstration on 9/11, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's why they're taking this whole nuclear war thing so nonchalantly, because they have other types of weapons they could, I really
precisely.
Do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And especially, so like if Putin really wanted to nuke us, right, he wouldn't do it. I mean, look at Chernobyl. Chernobyl was part of Russia. I mean, it probably is now, too. Up until, Ukraine split off. But, you know, that area can't be used and won't be able to be used for many, many lifetimes. You know, there are so many quiet weapons, for silent wars that they can they can take out our power grid. They can do so many other things. Why in the world would they bomb somebody, bomb us with technology that's going to make land unusable? That just doesn't make any sense anymore.
No, it doesn't. And you need to really factor in this huge technological thread that's being woven around the entire globe with this Starlink satellite system.
Not to mention the mutually assured destruction. There's no way that Russia's anyone's going to get away with, especially a nuclear strike on the United States. Retaliation would be very quick, and there's no way. I mean, we have nuclear weapons on submarines that nobody even knows where they are.
Yep.
Right.
Like, there's no way they
We've
can escape retaliation.
Yeah. They lost two nuclear subs.
So I think we're all in agreement, though, that nuclear, that's the thing, the fear tactic that they're trying to push on everybody right now is that, nuclear war is going to be, a dark winter or a cold winter or whatever Biden said. But I think that we're all in agreement that these are outdated technologies.
Yeah, I don't foresee a nuclear war. I don't, because the thing is, nobody really wins the nuclear war.
Precisely.
Everybody loses. So who's going to do it? I don't foresee that happening. So.
Well, the problem is we have sociopaths that are in charge right now.
Yeah.
You got to
factor
those sociopaths also know that they've got better weapons. That don't destroy the environment.
With this COVID thing, how would you ever thought that the entire world would be shut down over, it's like
I would not put anything past. These people are crazy.
Well, okay, but they could have shut down the whole war with a nuclear winter, too, and they didn't. They chose a virus, which is another weapon, right?
Yeah, well, I'd also, something that I found out recently, that China's actually had a similar problem that we have with a bloated, a high number of older people, like a large older generation, having to be supported by a smaller younger generation. And it just seems kind of convenient that COVID was deadly to the elderly.
Yeah, the youth and the sick and the old.
And it was started there. They made it, and it just happened to kind of alleviate a big problem that they had. It's pretty convenient.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's the useless eaters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not me saying that.
And then they used it for the shutdown.
I'm saying the useless eaters. What's that?
And then it was used for all the shutdowns, too. So, I mean, that was... And the thing is, it's like COVID didn't destroy our economy. It didn't cause the problems we have. It was the reaction to COVID, the shutdowns that destroyed the economy. If nothing had been done about COVID, there might have been more deaths, maybe. Maybe not. But,
no.
But the
lockdowns caused a lot of deaths. Getting people's immune systems away from each other, we need to have, we need to be exposed to little pieces of virus and bacteria in order for our immune system to fight it. The worst thing that we could have done, the one aspect of this that killed the most people was staying 6 feet away. Because you could, if you got exposed to a little piece of COVID, you might get sick, you might get a little cough or whatever, but your body would have that information to fight it.
Yeah, and the best strategy to deal with it, I think, should have just been to protect the vulnerable, the elderly, and the immunodeficiency, to protect the vulnerable, and everybody else just go to work and live your normal life.
Exactly.
I think that would have been much better, but they wanted, but they had to get rid of Trump, and the economy was so good. I don't think they, even with cheating, if they hadn't destroyed the economy, they couldn't have defeated Trump. And then, of course, they opened the way for the unverifiable mass mail-in ballots. So that was the other part of it.
So we just hit our 60-second mark, guys. I love this conversation, but we hit our 60 seconds, and let's take this up again next week because I love this conversation. You know I do. For everybody listening, please share this if you can. And thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, John, for being here. I really appreciate your input as always, Elizabeth. You're my rock, John. I'm so glad you're here with us. You're welcome back anytime.
Yeah, it's always fun. Thank you.
Yeah. So again, thank you guys so much.
All right. Have a good night.
All right. Love you,
John. Love you. We'll talk to you next week, guys. Rock on.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.